Welcome into the Camastrick Podcast, episode number 119.
Yeah. I'm a barbecuing motherfucker, is what I am. And I'll say it right off the bat.
What does that mean?
That I barbecue. I barbecued so much this weekend, I sent you a picture, and you probably puked all over your fucking self.
Were they veggie dogs, I asked
Man,
you.
Man, don't even ask stupid-ass questions. I don't even know what that means, veggie fuck dogs. No. These were fucking monster Roman Polak penis dogs. They were humongous. They were thick and girthy and long. I look at them and I get jealous.
Okay, there is a veggie dog named, it's called Up Dog.
That's cool. Yeah, oh, like, just like Scotty Up
yeah,
Dog?
Yeah, it's called Up Dog.
Is it thin and handsome?
But you're the only one who acts like barbecuing is like a whole weekend event.
It's a weekend
like,
event,
it's
baby.
It's like a day long deal.
It is.
No,
for
it's
me.
Not.
Yes, it is.
It's
for
like
me.
An hour. It should take like an hour.
No, man. I do ribs, baby. I fucking smoke it. I smoke shit. I do tomahawk steaks. I chill out. I kick my feet up. I make a cocktail. I fucking smoke chicken wings. I feed the fucking neighbors. I feed the fucking animals.
Oh, did
in
you
the backyard.
Take some stuff to the neighbors?
Yeah. They threw it back at me.
I recently read that smoked meat causes cancer.
Everything does, man. Like
carcinogens.
There's a lot of things that I do that cause.
So
cancer.
I wouldn't be doing that. Man. You need to know what you're doing. That's the problem with you. You're such an amateur when it comes to your barbecuing, really. And you're smoking it when that causes cancer.
So dumb. You're so dumb. It's unbelievable. I knew I was growing when I was 14, 15. My dad, my dad would steak and chicken all the time. And people hate it. But I'm like, I remember literally growing every fucking day, getting stronger, doing this.
You could feel yourself grow.
I could honestly feel it. I didn't have protein.
You're not very tall, though. And
my parents aren't tall. They're 5'9".
But you were growing like how? Like your bones?
Look how big I am, Andy. Like I'm jacked as fuck. My dad would cook me that shit all the time. So I learned how to cook, and I watched him do it, and I'm obsessed with it. I chill in my backyard. I got an awesome sponsor, and they hook me up all the time. So I just take my time, and I feed the fucking... I feed the children, Andy. Mm.
Yeah, because you had a lot of food going.
Children.
Did you have, like, everybody came over for dinner, though, right?
No, I just give it away.
No, your parents, I thought your parents
came
over.
Yeah, my parents came over. I took them for a nice ride. Look, I got to cherish, like, to hang out with my mommy and daddy, man. Like, you know, like, I just, they don't like to leave their house, so I got to force them over to my house. And I take them on these nice, cool rides up in the mountain, like, the hills and shit like that.
You know, you don't live in the mountains.
No, in the hills.
In the hills.
In the hills.
Yeah, there's lots of hills
Andy,
up there.
I know the terrain
and
around
did
here,
they
homie.
Like it out there?
They love it, man. They're obsessed with it.
Are they going to move next door to you
they
here?
They can't
or
afford
no?
that. You're fucking crazy. They do want to move, though, because there's so many people at our old house. Andy, everybody stares. I feel bad for them because they fucking built these houses behind my parents now where I used to live. And everybody's staring at us and shit. And I fucking hate it. So that's what I told you. When I walked around naked. I'm like, oh, hi. No, we're out of here. Mm. So it's good to see my mom and dad, man.
It's cool. I'm glad you had them over.
Yeah, man.
And the food turned out good and everything. And you're handing it out to the neighbors, which is
so funny how I say it. It's good to see my mom and dad. I see them every goddamn day. I went there today, too, because I can't stop going to their house, man. I don't know what it is.
I know. We had some rainy weather. We had a lot of wildlife in our backyard throughout the weekend.
I bet you did. A couple birds?
Well, no. We've had a lot of stuff because of the elk that are coming through, they just stay there.
Yeah.
They don't leave. Like, even through the rainstorm yesterday, they wouldn't leave.
It's so funny.
But the Whitehorn sheep are... Like, they let, like, little... he'll go up and pet the Whitehorn sheep.
You got camels up
they
there, too,
let
right?
them pet the sheep, which...
And he's so wealthy. He has a 9-foot fence in his backyard. He's got a half an acre, and he's got elk, sheep, camel,
it's actually
bears.
3/4 of an acre. I was wrong about
3/4
that.
3/4 of an acre. Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
And you got all this shit. You're imagining things. You're looking at a high school, and you're looking at all the football players, and they're like, I'm going to come over and hang out and eat all your fucking food.
Hey, 13...
Then they're going to realize you eat grass, and they're going to be like, fuck you.
I may barbecue tonight, actually.
What are you going to barbecue? Air?
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
all right, 13 teams now are letting fans in.
Thank God.
But like 1,800
Can
fans.
Can I say a hot take?
Some are like 1,800
Can
fans.
Can I say a hot take?
That's not
on
a
this
lot,
podcast.
But at least we're getting fans in almost half the
Can I
league
say
now.
A hot fuck take real quick?
Yep.
I wear my mask everywhere. You know that. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit. I'll wear whatever.
Do you wear?
I got that fucking, I got the
Crown Royal
one. I got a camouflage. I look pretty cool when I wear a mask, okay? But I'm not, we do radio shows every fucking day, Andy. We got radio shows. We got everything. We have to talk fucking sports. I can't get into it, homie. I just can't literally get into anything too much if there's not psycho fans going nuts. Mm. I can't, even hockey, I'll watch it, and I have to watch it. The other night, Rangers are playing fucking Trent Frederick and a guy, I'm going to say it, Trent Frederick and the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. There's some fans in the stands, and they're fighting left and right. And I could, yes.
The fans are.
No. Well, the fans are going crazy.
Oh, they're fighting on the ice.
I saw a clip where a guy's like fucking with his drink. Remember like the old days where he's, you have your drink and there's a fight and he spills it on the lady in front of him. I want to see more of that. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that, lady.
Yeah.
He'll hook you up. You're good. But like, without seeing, when I see that, when you watch a game, and I know it was like, well, where you been for the bad? Well, I mean, I have to talk about this shit every day on radio. So do you, Andy. But when you see no fans in the stands, I thought I didn't care back in the day, but now I'm like, fuck that, man.
I wonder when.
I want them back.
Yeah. I know.
I can't get into it unless people are going crazy. I can't get into it, man.
How are the players going to handle playing in front of a packed house again? Like, their adrenaline they're going to be absolute psychos.
Then do it. Go be Jordan Binnington and be a fucking nutbag. I don't give a shit.
What would you do if he came by your bench and cross-checked you?
Well, if I was on
would
the
you have grabbed him?
Can I say something? I will. Mm-hmm. If Jordan Binnington's leaving the crease, I'm beaking the fuck. I love him.
Yeah.
Love that man. But if I'm on the other team, he's beaking, and then he fucking goes to our bench, and then he goes to our captain. And fucking not only tries to punch him with a blocker on and the stick in your fucking hand.
It was Carlson, wasn't it?
Is he not?
No, I don't think he's the captain.
No,
he's not the captain.
Okay, he's their leader. he's their captain of making the most money every year. How's that? So if that happened and I was on the ice, I would piss pump him like no other. Like, I would be like so pissed. You don't fake punch our leader with your goalie stick. So when it comes to a built-up emotion, I want that so bad, man. These guys are going on these in warm-ups is like in particular where you cruise around and you just look at your friends and your fucking people are watching you. Maybe you're in a different, you're in Philly and guys are flipping you off. You're like, fuck yeah, let's go. And you say hey to the little kid in the corner, but then you flip that guy off and then now you're going. You got your bucket off.
Hey, a lot of players tell me that it's not about playing in front of fans at home. It's being on the road.
On the road, fans. Fucking chirp me, baby. Okay, let's go.
Well, let me ask you this about about Binnington, though. Mm-hmm. And listen, this is who he is. And listen, a lot of people love it. I love it too, man. I love the fact that he brings that out. I wish other guys would do that.
Oh, shit.
Honestly.
Let's go.
I mean, other guys maybe could, get a little amped up every once in a while.
Show emotion,
on
baby.
All teams. But do you think, what if you're a player? Wouldn't you guys, before the next game you play against Binnington, be like, let's get in this guy's kitchen.
Absolutely.
Let's see, how is he going to become unglued? Will he become crazy? Is he going to be composed?
Well, I think that they figured that out already. Even after the Stanley Cup playoffs, I think that they tried to, man. Like, look, you know what the hardest thing in the world...
He doesn't lose his composure too often.
You know what the hardest thing in the world to deal with? And I'll tell you right now. It's not when Jordan Binnington was getting chirped by the fans or anything like that. It's when Jordan Binnington fucked up on Twitter 2 years ago.
With what?
They dug Winnipeg media. This guy dug into Benner's tweets back in the day, everybody does now. Mm-hmm. And Benner said a couple weird things, and he did, and that's fine. And he said a couple weird things. So
back in the day when he was like
2014,
teenager, yeah,
like 2014. Just like, okay, so the first game in Winnipeg, Andy, when his first playoff game was in a Canadian city, hardcore shit. He wakes up the game of the morning.
And
game
somebody
day,
digs this shit up,
and
whatever.
He wakes up and he looks at his phone and there's a million tweets and a million text messages like, what'd you do? Mm-hmm. And then your GM calls you, Doug Armstrong, and you have to go meet with him, Craig Berube, before your first motherfucking game.
And then come out and make a statement in front of the media.
Statement, and then you go out there and win a fucking game.
I know.
And win a fucking series. So
what does that tell you?
That's what I'm talking about. That's why I brought this up. What are you going to say to him, Evander Kane? Who are you kidding, homie? Who are you fucking kidding? You ain't coming on this fucking podcast and you're fucking chirping him. Who are you kidding, brah? Here's the point. If you can overcome that when the fucking everything's on top of you before you even became anything, when everybody thinks you're just lucky anyway getting into the playoffs because you won all those games in a row and this is just puck luck and this, that, and the other, and you have all that shit come down on you and you go out there and you motherfuck it up. Fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a fucking man.
I can only imagine, though, what it's like, though, for a goalie. Like, you know, you're so pissed off. You're not playing well. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Getting pulled is a fucking... Look, you said it today.
Yeah, it's...
And I'll quote you on this.
Yeah.
When you get benched, no one knows until, the next period.
Right.
No one gives a shit. When you get pulled as a goalie, you're like... the whole...
How
everybody.
And then you're getting chirped
by the opposing
bench. Like,
you beat the fuck out of him 2 years ago?
Obviously, sometimes you don't have to skate past the opposing bench.
In this instance, he did.
Here, you got to skate past
here
the
in
bench.
San Jose, baby.
And he just did a little turn, like, what'd you say?
Because San Jose, in San Jose, you can't just walk mm-hmm. behind your bench. So mm-hmm. you have to skate all the way across the fucking ice,
yeah.
which is stupid. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's like, fuck that, man. Like, Binner looks at those guys like, I just fucking owned you 2 years. You guys are so cap fucked. I just owned you 2 years ago.
And terrible.
And you're fucking chirping me? Fuck all you. I'll fuck all you up.
Yeah, so I kind of like seeing that.
I love it.
Does that really fire a team up, though? Like, then you got to kill off the penalty.
Let me explain it then. Okay, so that second period happened. You have to kill the penalty off. Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of shook up, whatever. Then you go in the fucking between periods, and you see Benner with half his shit off, mm-hmm. and you look at your goalie, who fucking is just the best, and he's fucking rattled. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I bet you Ryan O'Reilly's like, fuck everything. Let's fucking go. And fucking Berube came in and said, fuck this shit. You fucking, and they pumped him up. And mm-hmm. everybody's like, we love him. Like, he's our fucking savior. Let's go. And they went out there and won. He kind of is.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, how is he not?
They go as far as he takes them.
He's their savior. Mm-hmm. And he was 2 years ago. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So, like, when he's that rattled, without Corey Perry doing something in front of the crease, like, whatever. But, like, he's got pulled. You guys fucking suck in front of him. You did.
Well, he let in some
goals. I don't give a shit at this point. It's like fucking play in front of him. Mm-hmm. I know you're banged up, and so he's rattled. So the guys probably came together in the locker room and said, fuck everything, let's go. Mm-hmm. And they did it, man. So if you act like that didn't help him, it did. Now, some shit doesn't help if you two-hand a guy in the back of the head, like, oh, yeah, he's pumped up. No. Mm-hmm. No. But when you fucking challenge as a goalie, you're fucking awesome. Ask Ronnie Hextall about that. What are we talking
about? What about him?
Well, he's like, I'll step up to the plate and get the team fired up.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, like, Ronnie,
yeah,
why,
like,
are you
why are you the
why
one
are you
that's
doing,
doing
it?
Well, there
you
but go. But he's on the big bad Flyers,
but,
too.
But there you go. So, like, why is our fucking goalie being the man? Somebody else fucking do it. You don't think Berube went in that locker room?
Well, yeah. Especially if you're hearing somebody chirp your goaltender on the other side.
No shit.
What if they would have done that to Marty back in the day?
Fuck. Well, then I'm going to yell at Henry Lundqvist and then get buckled by Colton Orr.
Which you did.
Like, Cam's so tough. Look at him yelling at beautiful Henry Lundqvist. Oh, hi, Colton Orr. Oh, how's that left? Oh, dung.
Okay,
I'm cool.
Somebody referred to the Scotia, which I like to call the North Division, the Scotia North, as the American League of the NHL. Do you agree with that?
Because they're crazy up there, maybe. Because, yeah, is Austin Matthews in the American League?
No,
I'm sorry.
He's a National League. Like,
fucking
playing in the American League,
like,
though.
Seriously.
Scores like every game. It's like men's league to him.
I mean, Ottawa could be considered that, maybe. But Brady Tkachuk's fun to watch. I'm sorry.
Dude,
I like.
Dude, they're
time
so
out.
Much fun to
time
watch.
Time out. I'd rather watch fucking Ottawa play than Anaheim. Times a million.
1,000%.
How's that? Times a fucking million.
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk, I'll watch you all day, every fuck day. And tell Matthew, don't ever call people idiots for asking them if they're going to fight. Why the fuck wouldn't you want to fight him? You think if Brady and you run somebody over and spear him in the fucking nuts and Brady's right next to you, he's not going to fight you? Why wouldn't he?
Okay,
but I'd love to beat the fuck out of my brother. Mm-hmm. I used to do it all the time.
Oh,
I want to beat
God.
Up my best friends.
Well,
me and my
listen, you know what's funny is Trent
Frederick.
Oh, God,
here we go. Is this a fight? But you, what?
Well, no, me and my brothers used to fight like crazy. Okay. Like,
toe, I'm sure.
Like, oh my God. I mean, like broken, like sliding glass doors.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are stabbing each other, I heard.
Pulling off like.
You shot each other with like AKs and shit, and you still survived. God, you're tough.
I'll tell you a true story.
You're fucking
I had a broken leg. My brother pulled the handle of the stove off and hit my leg with it.
Well, where are we? Somebody talking?
But anyway.
Well, I mean, here's the point.
Because the Sutters fought, but here's
totally,
the deal.
Man,
they would never
matter.
They're just saying, like, it would never be a premeditated type thing. They would have to be.
It's in the moment.
They would have to be something just crazy in the moment.
Don't call people idiots for thinking that way. How can you not want to fight?
I think enough people have asked that, and they've answered it enough times. Big Walt's answered it.
Well, how about this?
I think
if somebody runs somebody over and you don't stick up for your teammate, then, well, you're the idiot. I don't care who you are.
Well, it doesn't mean you have to fight him. He didn't say he wouldn't run him over. He wouldn't hit him.
If Brady could
catch him clean.
Hey, time out. If Matthew runs a guy, or Brady runs a guy right in front of Matthew, like, and Matthew's like, I'm not fighting you because he's my brother. Somebody else is going to do that. I'm like, okay.
No, but so here's what I was going with, and I lost my train of thought.
Yeah.
Even Trent Frederick, people are like, well, how is he tough? And he'll say, like, well, I grew up fighting my brother all the time.
Well, yeah.
That's how, exactly.
I fought my brother's friends. My brother wasn't even tough. I had to fight his fucking
And Brady
and
Matthew
friends.
Used to fight all the time.
Yes. No, exactly. No, that's the thing. It's like, well, don't say that we're idiots because you
Well,
guys,
I think he's talking to you on that. I think he's saying you're being an idiot. Why are you asking the question?
I didn't even ask that. I don't give a fuck.
I'm just kind of done hearing the Brady fight Matthews story.
I'm reading shit on Lewis and Clark throughout the night. Like, I'm not thinking about fucking Brady and Matthew fight. If they do, I'm like fucking right. But don't say that people are idiots they want you to go.
But here's the thing. Does it need to be asked every time they play each other?
Man, that's the way it is, dude. You're the biggest boy in the fucking block, and your brother's gonna be the biggest boy in the block. That's what the fuck they're gonna ask you. That just be like, yeah, I'm gonna bag his ass up. Say that instead. Say, I'll fuck his ass up. Like, who gives a shit? It's like I used to do back in the day until he went through puberty. then they probably went toe to toe, just like you and your brothers did, I'm sure.
I was the youngest.
Yeah.
So eventually, yeah. I just take over.
Yeah, you just take a crowbar and bash him over the head with that.
Nothing like
that. Didn't happen. That didn't happen. But yeah, no, man.
But it would get wild, man. When your parents aren't home and it's like every man for themselves, dude.
No, I know.
An entire summer. You know what I'm saying?
I had to do that shit. My parents were never home. They were working all fucking day. We were in the middle of the woods.
Anything could go down on any day. I mean, kids are just coming in and out of the house. Oh, left my God. And right.
I'm snooping around the house looking for everything I could, like, do. what's in this jar? Oh, I'm going to try that. What's in this?
It's just, you know, there may have been a broken wall when you get home. You just never know.
Man, I remember my parents just coming home late at night, and it's like, oh, Jesus, what'd you guys fucking do all day?
Oh, yeah.
Don't even worry about it. All right, we're going to go to bed.
But that's just what happened.
we're going to move, but we're going to go to bed.
Patrick Kane, real quick, scores his 400th goal.
Yeah.
He's just one of my favorite players ever, man. He plays so differently than everybody else. He is so. How many guys can truly just, like, carry a team the way that he does? And just on his own, they just carry it.
Who do you like better, him or Modo? Okay, let me rephrase it. Time out. Stop. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who would you rather have represent USA Hockey? We're both USA, baby. Mm-hmm. Who would you want to be the leader? Mike Modano, beautiful man, fucking cool as shit, did his shit, had the flow, has a cup, didn't get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
What are you asking? No, I'm saying as a whole for the NHL.
Like the face of USA Hockey?
Face of USA Hockey.
Chelios.
I'm just asking you, fine, Chelly, but Patrick Kane or Mike Modano, because this is what leads up to.
I don't know. It depends. If you're talking about, like, who do you want on the ice, you know?
No. Who do you want to represent USA Hockey more?
What does that mean?
Meaning, like, Patrick Kane's been through a couple bullshit things. Like, would you, or is he that much better than Modo to where you want?
I don't know if he's that much better, but he's better. I think he's the better.
He's a better skater.
I think he's the best American ever.
Yeah. And you remember Brett Hall's dual citizenship, guys, so just so you know, I know a lot of you
guys. He was born in Belleville, Ontario.
Yeah, I thought it was Winnipeg.
No, Belleville, Hall, Ontario.
Yeah, whatever.
And his dad's Bobby Hall. I mean, I don't, I can't, I only.
Hall, he scored a big goal for Team USA in 1996.
No, he represented Team USA because Team Canada kicked him to the curb, basically.
Is that what happened?
Oh, yeah, and then they wanted him back, and he's like,
what? He's like, fuck
yes.
You?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, he's like, fuck you. So I can only imagine
listen,
that.
I love the fact that he was. So he had dual citizenship.
What happened with that again, though?
I think something about Canada. That, like, for whatever reason, like, he wasn't selected. So he went to USA, and then Canada, like,
in the mid '90s when he's scoring 80.
I know, early on,
even earlier.
I don't know what
more.
His first Team USA, or you know what? Maybe they cut him, and he just didn't.
Was it 96?
And he just held a grudge,
and so he's like, "Fuck this!" I'm
in 96.
My duel.
He chose
and then
USA.
He wins. That was a world championship.
But he fit in so much better. No, the World Cup, yeah.
World Cup, yeah.
But
yeah.
He fit in so much better with that group of Americans than he would have
with all those Canadians. With Walt and all the fucking boys. Yeah, yeah, Walt and all those guys.
Hatcher and Chelios. All and our Dougie boys. Wade, Guerin, all those guys.
Cool-ass fuck
team.
Oh, my God. With Lou in the helm.
I know.
Did we not talk to Lou about that? How the fuck did you control those psychopaths? Holly, Walt, Chelly, fucking Hatch. They're all crazy. They're all like, I don't give a fuck about Lou. I'm going to do my shit.
Yeah.
How'd you do that? And he's like, we just did it. I don't remember what he said. But
you play against Kane? Yeah. Of course
Jesus,
you did.
Andy, I mean, for 10 years.
Yeah,
I played in the NHL for 10 years, Andy.
So why are you, years. You're asking that question. You almost like sound like you would lean more towards Modano for whatever
reason. I'm saying as a person to put on your pedestal for USA Hockey, I don't give a fuck which one. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking to people that I talk to, and they're like, well, Kaner did this, and Kaner did that. Modo's a perfect
It's always
specimen.
The last one who always so you, seems you might, to get the most attention.
Well,
but
Modo didn't get in trouble for anything.
Of course
Kaner
not.
Kaner kind of did, so that's why I'm kind of
Kaner was
like,
young and immature.
I agree with that.
I don't have an issue with what he did on a college campus.
No, he did some with some
girl.
Thing.
The girl thing was a joke.
Was it a joke? Okay, that's all I care about.
Her attorney fired her and basically said, you have no evidence. And it was like that manufactured like rape kit or something like that that they had.
Yeah, exactly. So that was still though, man.
Like, no, like it came out like it was completely fabricated.
That, I don't give a, the cab thing. Some cabbies,
Wisconsin.
Some cabbies I want to bag
the
up
situation,
to.
The situation. You don't do that. With the with the girl.
With the girl.
We don't know
different.
Everything, but from what it sounded like and the way the authorities reacted to it,
then
that it was fabricated and he was falsely charged.
That's the only thing I care about. I don't give a shit if he wears a Caner shirt and goes to Wisco and fucking wheels chick. I don't give a fuck about. But if you hear that, then it's like, okay, I need, you know. But anyway, you just don't know. Moto never had that, although it's a different era.
Different. They see. Here's the deal, like Patrick Kane, he's partying at Wisconsin, having a good time, and there's cell phones everywhere, and everyone's videotaping him.
Andy, I know, man.
Moto didn't have that. I went to a card shop when I was 16 with my girlfriend, and Moto's trying to wheel her and offering her tickets the next day to the game. So there's no cell phones and all
that
type of
stuff. Was it a girlfriend or was it your friend that likes you because you could talk like emotional shit with her?
Hot.
Were you talking emotional? Here's Andy's girlfriend. Hi, Andy. I got to talk to you about my boyfriend. Can you sit and talk to me for a bit? Oh, I need to let it out. It's like when you call me every morning.
No.
And you're like, I like you. Can we hang out? Like, yeah, but I need to talk to you about my boyfriend. Like, yeah. Is that your girlfriend?
No.
Okay. Just wondering.
Why would that surprise you?
I'm just saying. Come on. Your wife's hot. Don't get me wrong.
Come on.
But this was when you're successful now. Okay. Back then, you weren't. Now you're successful.
No, I was.
So you could wheel hot chicks like your wife. Back then you were. Come on.
What are you trying to say? You're trying to say. You think girls, for the most part, that's all they care about?
No.
Money.
No, but you need to take care of business, dude. Like, why the fuck, if I'm a girl, why would I want a guy that wasn't successful or didn't have a vision on being
successful?
You
ever see like a real successful guy who has just
a mutant?
A super hot wife.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, well, how do you wheel her?
Well, no wonder. Yeah. But I've also seen the opposite of that. Or I've also seen this. That, I mean, look, there's so many hot girls, guys. I'm telling you. If they treat you like shit, it's not worth it. I am telling you this right now. If you got a fucking
hold on, are you giving relationship advice? I want to hear this. Let's set this up. What kind of relationship?
You guys should all be pretty envious of my lifestyle. Like, let's be completely honest.
What do you mean? Explain that.
I got a lot under my belt. I don't have any kids. I just got married. My wife's hot and cool, and she respects me. Like, and we got a little bit of money chilling. Like, it's not bad. It's not a bad thing. I'm not chasing kids around in Windsor and shit like that. So, like, I'm like the model citizen for, like, not getting people pregnant and hanging out and marrying who you want. That's all I'm saying. So if a hot chick's next to you and she treats you like shit, it's just not. I know you like taking her out in front of your buddy. Listen to me. I know you like taking her in front of your buddies. Look how hot my girl is. Well, she's flirting with your fucking hot buddy. Your buddy who's 2 inches taller than you with better flow and has got more money, she's flirting with him right now. Ooh. What's the point of it? She's not banging you anyway at that point. Doesn't matter how hot she is, they have to treat you with respect. I swear to God. And you have to do the same thing to her. I'll write this shit down for all you motherfuckers, man. It doesn't matter how hot they are. There's always some girl hotter. But if they treat you like shit, the hotness wears off. Write it down.
You're telling me you've always treated. I hope you always
been
respectful.
When I was younger, I was a fucking asshole. Wait, time out. No. I told you this before. I was a fucking prick in juniors. No excuse for that, dude. I didn't know who I was. I remember trying to brag to girls about how much money I had because I just signed for a couple hundred grand. And they're like, Cam, just be normal with me. I'm like, oh, okay. And you just figure it out. I wanted to be the biggest thing. Look, I finally got attention. I'm from Eureka, Missouri. I finally get like a little bit of attention from fans. Like, I'm cool and everybody. And they're like, we don't care. We want you just to be nice. And you just learn from that, man. I was trying to brag too much. I was too loud.
Until you got beat up.
Until I got my ass fucking beat up in Windsor. And I'm like, what am I doing?
You know, you deserved that, too.
I deserved it.
Yeah.
Big time.
I probably would have done that to you.
I was not.
Yeah, I would have beat you. I would have beat you up at the bar if you would have came up and tried to talk like that to me. Probably would have taken you down.
You wouldn't have been in the bar because you wouldn't have been allowed in there, dude. I was like 17.
Well, I think, what is it, like 18 there?
19.
19?
Yeah, it's 19 in Windsor, homie.
I mean, they don't really check. They don't really check for that.
Well, when you're me, they don't. But the point is, guys, like,
Jim Rutherford, he's on this edition of the Cam and Strick podcast, episode number 119. I gave this guy a lot of credit.
That's cool shit.
And he's got a 12-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I think you
might
have a 12-year-old when you're 72. At the rate you're going right now, that's what I see happening. I see that happening in your future.
The rate
future.
I'm going on right now is like I'm not having any kids ever.
Well, you say that, and then you're going to end up having one.
Well, what are you looking back on to tell me I'm going to have a kid if you're going to go for the rate? Like, you just got to
have
someone.
I'm just saying eventually this is going
to
happen.
That's why I don't answer the 519 calls from fucking Windsor. Unless you're like, hey, dude, it's JJ Maurizio. Remember we used to party?
It could be a sponsor.
Yeah.
Could answer those.
Yeah, I mean, in Windsor?
How you doing in Canada? I needed to hear from the Canadians right now.
I know, man. I love them. I feel bad
so
for them.
So worried about them.
I feel bad for them. Dude.
Although apparently it's kind of opening up just a little bit.
I hope so, guys. I hope. I
would
know you guys
billet a kid?
Fuck!
Because I've got somebody who needs
fuck!
To.
Fuck! you fucking crazy? Oh.
Why?
Oh, God. Are you fucking crazy?
Why wouldn't you do that?
Oh, Jesus.
I know Christ. A family that's looking for
have you seen my wife? Have about? You seen my fucking... Are you fucking...
What about her?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sweating now. You fucking idiot.
No,
God,
you
you're
are.
A fucking idiot.
What is wrong with you?
Oh, my God. No, man. Oh. I remember when I played for the Sting and when I was 16 years old. I remember the ownership group. They were fucking dying. They're like... Can your mom and dad billet? And my mom and my dad goes, are you fucking crazy?
I can see your dad doing that.
No way. He's billing me. You fucking nuts.
But I can see them saying yes.
God.
The way they do with
animals. The way I would walk into some of these billet houses when I was young and I would look at their wife or daughters, I look at, and we'd be like, oh, my God. Like, the first thing you think is, like, what's the wife look like? What's the dog? Like, this, the okay. first, you think I'm going to bring a 17-year-old kid into my house?
Okay, you, all right, we understand. I didn't realize it was going to create this much trauma.
You might want to.
No, I wouldn't bring one into my house
either. No, yeah, you would.
Unless, you know.
They're going to paint?
Well, no. Maybe
you're
teach Ty a thing or two.
You're crazy. You're crazy.
Okay.
Holy fuck.
Jeezo.
Well, I'm just letting you know.
That really.
Oh, I could only imagine these two guys. I just picture how I was when I walked into places like. I'm like, I'm Satan.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
All right. Jim Rutherford.
Yeah.
He's
who's not Satan.
No, he's not.
He's a Jesus.
He is a great name. Well, the opposite. Great guy. Yeah, the opposite.
Yeah, that's
great
Jesus,
guy.
Right?
Yeah. Really interesting situation there in Pittsburgh, how he just decided, you know, something happened, right? Because he doesn't want to truly provide all the details, and he's still under contract, so those will come out. But, man, it's almost like for it to go down like that after all the success that he had there, it's too bad that it had to end like that, you know?
Yeah, there's more to it, man. And we got as much out as we could with him, and he was comfortable, and he was awesome. And we get the big dicks on, dude. Like, we get the fucking GMs and shit. And you know, we can get all fucking guys, whatever you want. But Andy calls these guys, and they fucking say, yeah, we'll come up. We'll come on. And we talk to him, and Andy, you ask him every question you could. He didn't want to answer that particular part, but he did say something to the effect of, I fucked up a meeting, basically. Mm-hmm. He didn't say fuck up, but he's like, I kind of
uncharacteristic.
So that's a fuck up.
He wasn't dropping F-bombs.
No, but I didn't either.
No,
didn't. Well, you cussed more than
I did. We might have to take that out.
No, we're not. I'm looking at my...
It just
came out. I'll bag you up myself. Just remember that. Not Andy. I'm looking at you now.
Because I wouldn't disrespect a guy like
you're not disrespecting
Jim
him. Stop. We were great with him. Stop. There's a reason why they come on, okay? We're disrespectful at the beginning part. But right now, no, but you asked him, and he's just like, I messed.
Yeah.
I was on. So, but he's like,
The COVID thing.
Now he was freaked out.
He was like, he took that very, very serious,
right.
As he should.
No doubt.
And most, I don't want to say, older people, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's 72, but he's had one shot.
Yeah.
He's got another shot coming.
Yeah.
And, but his son didn't, he saw how it impacted his son and everything. I think back at it because when we first started quarantining, when the corona came into our lives, I didn't see, in-laws, parents, nothing like that for months and months and months.
I mean, I saw my parents every goddamn day.
Well, you live next door.
Oh, I know.
And you needed to finally grow up and move on and get on your own, which you've recently done.
It's so funny how you say that because I lived next door. I didn't live in their fucking basement.
But they were, you would go in and out.
I bought that house when I was 19. 18 years old yeah. next to my yeah. parents, not their basement, just mm-hmm. so you know,
yeah,
motherfucker.
Dude, it's been raining a lot, by the way. Yeah. Blay,
people care about that in Blay, no, people Blay, care about that
no,
in Canada.
No, no,
hey, get the
but
fuck
Blay
on.
Was getting so, he was so muddy this weekend. Like, I'm not putting up
they
with
clean
it.
Clean up.
I'm not putting up with it. I'm just all like, right, letting you know.
Fuck this
like,
shit.
He's getting mud all over the house.
Andy, it's springtime.
And, I mean, so then the neighbor, they let their dog in my fence.
Oh, that's a no-no.
They let their dog in my fence.
They open your fence up?
From the back. There's a gate in the
wait,
back.
Wait, time out.
Yeah.
Time out. Wait.
Yeah.
You're fucking Hoosier neighbors in a wealthy part of fucking Huntley.
They're doctors.
They let their fucking dog come in your house. Your they open your gate up.
In the back.
Andy, put your fucking foot down.
How do I handle pussy? This? How do I handle
you this? You say, what the fuck is this?
So
the
anyway.
The fuck is this shit?
So Blay is like doing his thing, hanging out. You know, he's roaming with the...
Did he get beat up by this dog?
No, because he's roaming with the sheep, and he's like, he gathers them.
Did the other dog like the sheep?
And he rounds them up. So the other dog comes in. Well, now it's all out. Like, they're just going, they're tackling
each
other.
What kind of Hoosier-ass situation is this?
They're playing like crazy. So Blay is so muddy. I mean, just head to toe, just covered in mud. And I said, I've gotten to that point. It may be over with Blay and I. It may be over with Blay and I.
I'm gonna kill him.
Okay?
Brody, this is, Brody, you have a dog. Don't listen to him. Just stop.
So then we talked. So he stayed outside for another. Like,
oh, you talked to him?
Yeah.
You guys had to sit down?
Yeah, for a few hours.
Jesus, Andy.
He needs a bath. He's just really just.
Just give him a fucking bath. You don't dude. Look. You carry it. Look, when they're all shitted up like that, you fucking carry them. You throw them in a goddamn shower. You fucking put the thing on it. You dry them off. And you take a hair dryer and you blow them off. And you fuck get out of here.
You can't use a hair dryer.
Yes, you can
really?
On him. On
really?
Blade, yes, you put a hair dryer on the motherfucker and you mm-hmm. take. Actually, time out. Have the kids do that. Mm-hmm. You carry them in a damn thing and then have the kids blow dry the fucking dog and wipe them down.
Okay.
Motherfucker.
But I'm not putting up with this. I'm just telling you.
You should put up with it.
The neighbor putting his dog in my yard.
Well, your neighbor, you're a pussy is what you are. Talk to your fucking neighbor, fucking doctor. The fuck, was he a gynecologist or something? He's in that field. I'm one of them gynecologists. Oh, you want to fucking creep out women.
He's IT. She's the doctor.
Oh, that's hot then.
You like that?
Yeah. She the one let fucking tell her to fuck off too. If she's letting the dog in.
No, I don't talk to the women like that.
Oh, good for you. Okay. If she's letting a dog in your house, I don't give a shit if you're a woman, you're a guy, or whatever. I'm like, get your fucking dog out of here.
But I agree with that. And then the kids came over, and the kids are running around inside there, and they're asking for like ice cream and stuff like that. It got out of control.
You let it get out of control. Get control of yourself. Hoosier ass fucking neighborhood you live in. The most expensive Hoosier fuck neighborhood ever. Fucking, no, my neighbors take my garbage and organize it. Andy's neighbors, doctor, they take their fucking dogs and just like throw them in your fucking yard. Yeah, Hoosier.
I'm not putting up
with it. So fucking Hoosier ass neighborhood.
All right, let's get to the interview with our boy Jim Rutherford, longtime GM, former owner. Could you imagine having your GM also
How do you get
own
the money?
You?
How do you get the money for that? I forgot to ask him.
No,
that.
Because Peter Carmanos, that was his guy.
How do you get the money
in
for
Windsor,
any of that?
He hired him and then... basically said, hey, go find a NHL team, found Hartford, whatever.
Yeah,
and he gave him part ownership.
Yeah, but what does that mean? Does he have to throw money down on that?
No,
because he
not.
Didn't have that
no,
much money.
No,
he's making
not.
170, which
I
is
mean, I don't know
that.
If he had to put any money down. Probably not. He just got a piece. So
that's
part of his deal.
Hey, Windsor, where are you at? I fucking bled for you. Come on.
Yeah, they're not making you owner.
Well, they got my number in the stands. Whatever.
Mm.
Is that good?
Is your number in the stands?
I don't know. I heard it was.
Wait, are you saying that your jersey's retired?
Know. Windsor, help me.
Oh, you can't get away with that.
I don't know.
You're trying to pretend your jersey's retired.
No, I don't think it's retired, but I think there's something there with my number on it.
Okay.
Just so you know.
We may have to take a trip then.
I know. Well, just to Windsor. How about the fans?
Just let us
listen
know.
To it.
Well, they're not
like,
going to the games.
And if there is nothing, then
they're certainly not going
I,
to
I
the
guess
games
I didn't,
now.
I must have had 58 fights instead of 48 that 1 year.
58 fights?
I had 45 one year.
In one
42
year?
The next. 40-something the next year. Mm. I bled for him. And I hung... And by the way, fans in Windsor, I love you all. I hung out with you. I just posted a picture of me and my mommy and daddy. And remember all you guys hanging out with my mom and dad in the beer room? And then I got kicked out of the game. And I went in there in my underwear and drank beer with you until the GM, Mike Kelly, had to tell me you can't do that.
He had to tell you a couple things. A couple of different times.
He's
all right,
awesome,
let's
by
get
the way.
To the
I love
interview.
Him.
With Jim Rutherford, another GM, on this edition of the Cam and Strick podcast. The GM interviews are gold, man. I love the GM interviews.
Oh, yeah. Talking to the these guys. The big dick motherfuckers.
I know. And, like, honestly, I almost did like the Doug Armstrong, like, can we have another hour with you? You know,
I know. Well, Dougie'd be like, hell yeah, let's go.
We had so much to get into.
Jim needed to go, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Car Shield. Hey, get the protection you need and get the protection you deserve. That's the way I look at it. Don't be stuck with thousands and thousands of dollars in repairs because you didn't get out in front of it. You got to be proactive, and that's what Car Shield allows you to do. Mention the promo code CAM. You're going to save 10%. It's terrible. It's embarrassing, but you got to do it, and it's worth it just to save the money between you and I. Okay, it's worth it. 800-857-2481, carshield.com. Pick where you want to have your car taken to. Pick the mechanic. Pick the repair shop. Dude, it's like really a... Like, all our sponsors are too good to be true. This falls in that category,
100%.
Too.
So easy peasy.
Yes.
I've dealt with this, like, firsthand.
When you have.
Remember, I was fucking embarrassed in Eureka.
It's completely embarrassing.
So embarrassing. Yeah. Walking out, everybody's like, hi, Cam. Yeah, and I started.
I know. The police are just, like, apprehending you. It was
fucking embarrassing, okay? And Car Shield hooked it up.
And it's 8 in the morning.
And now I had to move because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you
did. I had to move because of that fucking trend.
800-857-2481. Call Car Shield today. How about keepithandsome.com?
I'm keeping it handsome.
That's
right now,
what we're talking about.
I lost weight. I look.
Really?
I'm getting jacked as fuck.
Are you?
I'm sick of this.
I don't see that happening at all.
Do I need to take my shirt off?
No, I don't see that. Oh, are you working out though?
Oh yeah.
What are you doing? Like push-ups?
Oh, I do 300 push-ups
a day.
So in the morning, I'll get up. I'll have my coffee. Boo Boo will get up with me, a little key cat. I'll make a fire right now because it's still a little chilly. I'll put my computer up. I'll look at my beautiful backyard with literally real, actually animals back there because I can see forever because it's in a wealthy part of Franklin County. And I'll have the little kitty by me, and I'll listen to different things, and I'll do my thing. And all of a sudden, I'll do 50 push-ups. Boom. Get done. Listen to something. 50 more. Bah. Get done. Fix something, do this, 50 more, boom.
I do
then
that.
I'll go in the basement, I'll be like, I'm going to do fucking curls. Whip-blah, whip-blah, whip-blah. Then I'm going to do this, whip-blah. Then I'll take a 45-pound plate, and I'll sit on my ass, and I'll rustle it like, whip-blah, whip-blah, whip-blah. And then I take my shirt off, and I look in the mirror, and I'm like, oh, my word. Your hair looks okay. You need a haircut. Cul-de-sac in the back of your head, but god dang, you're jacked as fuck. Although you need to lose like 15, 16 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. No, 25, 26 pounds.
Mm. Yeah, so I do a lot of push-ups too.
I could tell.
And I do a lot of push-ups and
are they wheatgrass push-ups?
And get a workout in.
Are they the vegetarian push-ups?
Hey, listen, we've got those hats. Keepithandsome.com. Get your hat today. Check it out, man, and fight the bullying that exists out there. Be on our team.
Yeah.
Fight ugly. Get your Keep It Handsome hat and get it right now.
People want to know about Raven.
Oh, I know they do.
They want to know about Raven.
Well, we've told them all about Raven.
Well, they want to know if I'm okay with him still. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, he fucking pissed on me.
Yeah.
And then my parents hooked him up. And it's fine. But he was a bully. But then the reason why he was a bully is because his fucking daddy beat the fuck out of him.
Well, you don't even know that.
Well, he told me.
Did he?
I brought him out to the house. Like, okay. Why'd you piss on me, psycho? Okay. He's like, well, my daddy fucking pissed on me. I'm like,
oh, my God, really?
No, not pissed, but more like my daddy beats me, and I'm a fucking from North County. I have nothing. My dad's a drug dealer. My this, that, and the other. And I'm a fucking...
So you hooked him up, and you embraced a bully. That's probably rehabilitated him.
Exactly.
So
right.
Sometimes you have to embrace the bullies, man, because there is always a good side to somebody.
And not to mention, not all bullies are 6'4". Homeboy.
No, they're not.
No. You could be a little dinkball and fucking be a bully to everybody. You could be in high school and not have any friends and still be a fucking bully.
Have you experienced that? Like smaller people?
Yeah, it's like, why is this guy beaking me? I'm like, mm-hmm. What the fuck is this little fuck boy?
Yes,
you get my drift, eh?
I do. So check that out.
Don't be that way. Just be nice to everybody.
And get your Fight Ugly hoodie, too. Get a package deal.
God damn.
You can get it on Amazon, too, with the hoodies.
Bad karma happens to bullies. I'm telling you that right now.
Mention the promo code Cam and Strick. You're going to save 15%. So again, get the shampoo, get the conditioner, the beard moisturizer, which I use every day. Sometimes, yesterday I think I used it twice.
Look at my beard right now.
And
I got fucking birds living in this motherfucker.
You got the beard balm or the head balm. They got so many different things. Just check it out. It's an amazing website, like very modern website.
Oh, dude, he's an entrepreneur.
I know.
Dude,
so
we hang out with those guys.
Get your hat and get it today from Keep It Handsome. All right, Bud Light Seltzer, BudLight.com, 5% alcohol, 100 calories. Very good for you. Less than a gram of sugar. Very good for you. And they've got all these different flavors, including pineapple and grapefruit and cranberry.
Mango.
And strawberry.
Mango. Oh, mango and lemonade.
And lemonade. In a relationship with mango.
You don't know that. They still bang other dudes and girls.
Really?
Yes.
They're not like completely committed?
No, they're swinging motherfuckers.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. All the beer.
Really?
They all bang each other.
I see them together all the time, though.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. You see them. Yeah, well, they're making out. Then they make out with other people. They don't give a fuck. It's free living.
That's true.
This is like the 60s.
I don't think Lemonade
Woodstock.
Knows that at all.
She's getting fucking banged out by a lot of cats.
Really?
But Mango's the one that says, I'm taking you home at night.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they're reproducing. I want Mango and of course, Lemonade to like have kids and lovely children and things like that.
I thought for sure that they were in I thought it was like well known.
No,
that
it's a big orgy fest. Oh, dude. It's really? The best thing in the world.
Wow.
Anyway, I jump in all the time.
So check that out. So, and anyway, send us your pictures and your Instagram posts. Keep doing that.
Yeah.
With Lemonade and Mango.
What would Lemonade and Mango, what would you want to watch? Send me it. Send me it on Twitter, on fucking Insta, on fucking Facebook. I don't give a shit. Mm. I want to see what that mango and that lemonade. Oh, my word.
You know, listen, since you've just completely, like,
turned everybody off.
Well, and you're talking about those things that hang from the back of the truck.
Oh, the nut sacks.
Yeah, people are sending me pictures of, like, these. They hang from the back of your Crocs, like those shoes.
Hey, if you got Crocs on, you're not getting laid. If you have Crocs on, you ain't getting laid.
You think
take them the fuck off. And if you have Crocs on with a nutsack hanging on the back, you might get a makeout sesh. That's it.
I mean, those exist. They're called Croc nuts, I think. Didn't I send them to you?
Yeah.
Somebody sent it to me, man.
Yeah. You should get one. You should take that nutsack and put it in.
No.
You know where to put it.
I don't do that. I don't do
it. Well, you should.
With the, I don't put them on my truck.
No, put them on where your nutsack should be.
Oh.
Yes, I'm saying. Take that nutsack and put it where it should be.
You're making me very uncomfortable.
Jesus Christ, though. You brought it up. What the fuck you want to do? Am I not supposed to chirp you on this?
Hey, Bellman.com, though.
They ain't nutsacks.
I had some sushi last night that I picked up from Bellman. I just went out there
for
the sushi.
You piss off your ass.
No, I just went out there.
Dan's probably like, stop saying you're going to get sushi.
Like, Laurie's like, hey, what's for dinner? I said, I'm going to go by Bellman and pick up some sushi. And that's exactly what I did. I got a bunch of different.
Dan's probably like, are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah, because they will give you sushi. That's how they treat you.
They
flavored water and everything.
They're the best, man. Like, you just go in there and just talk to people. Like, they're so sweet and nice and classy and fun. They'll talk hockey with you.
Oh, my God.
Like, you could have your wife. You could have it. It doesn't matter. It's not the swinging dicks coming out telling him, you should beat me up in high school. No, you didn't.
No.
When was this?
No.
The fuck was this?
I got her.
I used to fucking beat you. No, what? No, like, Kate's like, I never saw him get beat. What? I saw him get beat up in Windsor.
All the salespeople fighting over who gets to sell her the car.
I got her. No, I got her.
No,
I told you
her.
I want the fucking blondes. Well, fuck. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know.
Psycho.
I know. Wearing Crocs, probably.
Crocs with nutsacks.
Oh, my God. That is the worst place I could ever think of.
They got nutsacks hanging out of their fucking earlobes, dude. They got nutsacks for earrings, these fuckboys.
I'd rather be inside of an IKEA.
Fucking weirdo fucks.
Than one of those
doesn't
damn places.
Doesn't happen in fucking Bauman.
No, it doesn't happen there. And so you got the Cadillac, Buick, GMC on one side of the street. On the other side, Cam, this is all in Troy. They've got the Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. They've got so much to choose from. They've got that pink Jeep, small wheels, two-door, soft top with flames on the side. It's got
I'll make out that fucking thing.
It's got flames, so it's really amazing what they have going on right now. And again, if you have a used car and you want to sell it, they'll buy it from you now. So check out Bellman.com up in Troy, Missouri. All right, go to camastrick.com, and we've got hats on there as well. Right now, $10 off, so you can check that out.
Cool.
And collaborating with Victor Hockey at Victor Hockey USA on Instagram and Twitter, victorhockey.com. Check out all the stuff that they have going on.
Oh,
he's creating some new stuff for us too, like some other t-shirts and some hoodies and stuff like that. We're going to have that out. We're only growing and getting bigger and bigger with our friends over there.
Damn right.
At
Victor.
Victor Hockey, our boys. Victor Hockey. Adam's his name.
Yep.
Out of Colorado. Tattoo artist. He's the man. All right, when I drive black tie. And I get what I want and I get it when I want it. That's the best part about driving black tie. Check this out. You get your app. You select the fleet of cars that you're interested in. Could be economy. Cam's looking at the economy. I look at the exotic cars and the luxury cars. But they have all different packages, man, based on what your budget is. And it's all very affordable. And then you have your app. Listen when I tell you this. Honestly, this is how it works. You go to your app, you select which car you want, and they drop it off at your house, and then they pick up the old one and take it away. And then 2 weeks later, you're like, okay, I want to drive this. I want like the BMW like 7 Series or the X6 like you're driving right now, Cam. Or maybe you want a Porsche, or it's going to be nice and you want to drive a Jeep or a convertible, G-Wagon, whatever. And you just go to your app, you select it, and they drop it off. And then they take the old car back. Too good to be true, like I said about CarShield. This exists, and that it makes sense with the dry black tie as well.
I want that Porsche. I'm going to trade mine.
I got a new Porsche.
I talked to Ellie, and I'm like,
I feel like you're trying to take my Porsche. I'm not letting that happen.
Well, when I drive it, people are actually going to see me and recognize me, so it will help their brand out a little bit more.
That's not true. Which is
always good. So I'm going to tell you, just swap it out real quick, and I'm going to do a little video for them and everything. So it's just easy. It's cool. They're so easy to deal with. We love them both. Looks like Jared Leto, which is pretty cool. Does he have a voice? Can he sing?
Well, we're going to find out. We got a new content we're coming out with next week. We're going to find out if he does.
I'm going to put a microphone in his head because he looks like Jared Leto. And Ellie's just an awesome girl. She's awesome. Fun and cool.
Yes.
So they're so easy to deal with, and they get so many different options. Mm-hmm. Check them out. Drive black tie.
When I drive, I drive black tie.
Jinx.
I get what I want when I want it.
I want that fucking Harry and the Henderson station wagon from back in the 80s.
Well, that you can get that. It's probably part of your economy package. Yeah. You can get that too. Although they don't have cars that are old. Good. They're all new and relatively new. Yeah. So check
Who's
it
calling
out.
In like, I want that 1989. Yeah,
nobody
state.
Is. Nobody no. is. All right, Jim Rutherford. This is the man.
He's fucking
and
cool
look for him to be with another team soon, I would think.
Oh, he came on the pod.
Well,
what
I would
expect?
Think another team's going to reach out and say, hey, we are interested in having you come here.
Exactly.
With your track record. So great conversation. Really enjoyed this. I think you will too with Jim Rutherford on the Cam and Strick podcast.
Oh.
Jimmy.
Hi guys,
how you doing, buddy?
What's going on? Hey, welcome into the podcast. And just so you know, we just kind of hit record and just roll and basically just have a easy conversation.
You
so.
Kicking your feet up? What are you doing, man? Where you at?
My wife's got me working around the house. This is real work.
Yeah, no wonder you want to get back in. You're like, hey, I'll go back into the NHL. So what
she got you doing?
What does she have you doing?
Just the standard stuff, picking up around the yard, moving boxes, moving stuff around. She hasn't got me cooking because she's a real good cook, so we'll stay out of the kitchen. But no, filling in the time. You know, the good thing is I got the vaccine about 2 weeks clear of the second shot now. And the relief is unbelievable. And so I have a 12-year-old son that was quarantined for 11 months because I was high risk. We didn't want him bringing the virus into the house. He didn't play hockey. He didn't go to school. He didn't see his friends. And it was tough, and it really wore on us. So now we got him back playing hockey. He's going to go back into class in 2 weeks, and we're starting to live a little bit more of a normal life.
Okay, so what made you high risk? Is it specifically because of your age, or is there another reason why you're high?
Yeah.
And so you took that much, you took it that serious, like a lot of people did, but you were, some people, as you know, Jim, they don't take it as serious. Yeah. So what led to you being so cautious?
Well, I took the advice of the team doctor, and I asked him how much I could do because I like to be around the team and observe what's going on. And when we were in the playoffs and went in the bubble, I didn't go, you know, based on the recommendation of the team doctor. So I just felt it wasn't worth the risk. You know, I mean, in a lot of ways it was life or death, based on the number of, people dying, in my age range. So I took it very serious.
Yeah, just get it done. Absolutely, just get it done. How do you feel, though? You feel all right with that? Did any side effects? I mean, it hits everybody differently.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is being quarantined that long was difficult. Probably harder on my son and my wife. But as for the vaccine, I didn't have any side effects. Didn't even feel it going into my arm, and my arm wasn't sore at any point, and no other side effects. So I was one of the lucky guys. I hope that means it's still working.
Well, yeah. Well, you were a goalie from 69-83, so you could take pain too. Just remember that.
Although they say the second shot, though, Jimmy, is the is the one that people have side effects. Is that true? I don't mean to scare you. I'm just asking.
No, I read about it all the time, and that's what I heard. I've had my second one. I'm 2 weeks out from having my second one, and nothing from the second one either. I was kind of anxious about it because I'd heard that there's a more of a chance, but no side effects at all.
All right, you know, I got to ask you this though, because listen, I'm a dad too. I've got three young kids, and for you to do it at 72, yeah. I mean, this is amazing. You have a 12-year-old son. I know you have kids that are older as well. But how do you think you are as a dad then versus now in terms of how you interact with your kids? Are you way softer now, Jimmy, in your older age or what?
Yeah, I'm way softer. Without question. And I get reminded. I have one other child, a daughter. She's 45. And I get reminded about how much softer I am on my son. But I think I'm probably a better father now. I am a little more mature, I think, than I am when I was younger, and I, you know, probably take it a lot more serious. Not that I wasn't a good father to my daughter, because we have a great relationship, but certainly the experience has paid off for this one.
Well, what's the difference though in those years? I mean, it's a big gap. So, like, what's the biggest difference between these kids? And you've seen it, man, and is it just the time? I mean, is it the way of life now where you have to just completely treat them differently? Is it the social media aspect? I mean, what is it? What's the difference?
Yeah, it's technology. You know, when my daughter grew up, she'd go outside and play for hours, sometimes by herself. She was an only child, and she figured out ways to entertain herself. But now the kids, everything's about technology and all the all the video games, Fortnite, and, you know, that's one that my son's big on. And then, you know, of course, you got to watch the social media with the people that aren't good people out there. And we've even experienced that. We've had to really watch who my son's on social media with. So it's a whole different lifestyle. I remember when I was a kid and growing up, the adults used to say, I don't know what that generation's going to do. They'll never figure it out. And that's what I remind people now, because as each generation's gone by, everybody says the same thing. Oh, my God, what a generation. What are they going to do? But this generation will figure it out. They have more tools than the generations in the past. More tools to be successful and to be smarter and all those things. So they'll be fine.
All right. Help me understand this. When you have a son that age and you're in the public eye, everyone knows who you are. You're the general manager of, you know, the most famous hockey player going today, right?
Yep.
And your son's on social media and they read things, whatever. Not everything's great, although you're probably not taking a ton of criticism based on the success that you had. Mm-hmm. But what's it like having a young kid who sees some of the crazy, crazy stuff that appears on social media?
Well, we tell him to stay away from those comments related to the team, whatever team that I would be with, because it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to get people that support you and people that don't support you. And as we know, social media is a lot of people's 30 seconds time of fame if they say something that gets some traction. So as a family, we really don't pay attention to that.
Oh, all right, Lord. So how'd you become a goalie? Like, you know, at a young age, I mean, I can only imagine the equipment you were using back when you were a kid. And, you know, obviously when you turn pro and play throughout the NHL, you must walk in these NHL dressing rooms and be like, oh, my God, if I had these pads back when I played.
No kidding. Well, I became a goalie. I was in a small town. We only had about 10 kids for the team. I was the smallest one. And my dad managed the local senior team, and the goalie used to come to our house. He gave me his goalie stick. So I started playing when I was 5. But when I started playing, I had forward skates that were used. I never had new equipment the whole time until I was like 17 years old. Always used equipment. I had a pair of forward skates. Shin pads were my goalie pads.
Oh, God.
I don't think I had a chest protector, but you didn't need one at 5 years old. I had big gloves that were way oversized, an oversized stick. I still have the picture of when I started. But, you know, you do the best you can with what you have. And I was fortunate. I mean, my parents give me everything they possibly could. And I had great parents. And I became the goalie in that town. And I was the only goalie on the team, so I didn't have to sit and watch every other game. And got to play a lot and love the game.
Yeah, being a goalie back then, though, gosh, the equipment's different. Not to mention 60s, 70s, early 80s. Guys are falling on top of you, Jimmy. They're slashing you. If you went and played the puck, they're going to run you over. Like, it was crazy back then. Was there any time where you're like, okay, these guys are starting to shoot high now. My equipment sucks. I don't have a neck guard on. Like, I'm getting dinged everywhere. Like, was there a point where it was like, okay, I might not want to do this anymore?
No, you never thought about it. You know, the first day I wore a mask, I was 16 years old. And I went to a double rinks in Toronto. It was in middle of August, maybe, to get ready to go to some junior camp. And I didn't have my equipment on since the last game I played, you know, the prior year in April or something. Went on the ice, I was probably on there 30 seconds. Some guy comes down to the hash mark, slap shot. Hits me in the mouth with my mask on, which I was wearing for the first time, knocked four teeth out, 42 stitches. And if there was ever a time to quit playing goal, that would have been the time. But you know, I went to the dentist, they cleaned up my mouth. And I was back on the ice about 3 or 4 days later. And you're right. In those days in the 70s, when you were playing goal, I mean, they were always shooting high because that was when the curve sticks first come out. Yep. They didn't have any limit on how big a curve you could have. Oh. And that puck, like when a guy like Bobby Hull shot the puck, I mean, it was sometimes it was going up, sometimes it was dropping, or it was like a knuckleball. I mean, it was really a tough time to play goal.
Remember, Bobby would, you know, you read all these things on him and watch these highlights. Like, he'd come down. He'd curve his stick, by the way, curve it like no other, where he could like kind of cut your head off with damn thing. But he'd come in and he'd rip a clapper inside the blue line right over your head, and he'd rim around the boards, and then all of a sudden all the goalies would be like, okay, and then he'd come down and shoot low next time and he'd score.
Very intimidating,
right?
Early in the game, him and a handful other guys in the league, even from bad angles, they'd be shooting it at your head to start the game, and you'd be on your tiptoes, and then of course at some point in the game they come down, they just slide one hard on the ice when you're expecting one under your chin.
I used to hear that all the time, maybe. Right, like you start the game, they always want the first shot to go at the goalie's head, right? Yes. To kind of get him a little bit nervous for the rest of the game. You don't hear guys say that.
It's like a big hit first shift.
Give me a guy, though, real quick before we move on, like who you played against, like who just their shot intimidated you, like you were you knew when it was coming, like it could hurt you.
Well, a lot of shots hurt you then because the equipment wasn't any good. Like I say to my son now at 12 years old, I said, you know, the chest protector and arm pads that he wears are probably 10 times more protective than what I wore in the NHL. I mean, I would have loved to have had his arm pads and chest protector in those days. And I mean, there was hardly anything to the equipment. So most shots, if you didn't catch them or use your blocker, they're hurting. But some of the guys, basically in those days, there were about 3 or 4 guys in each team could really shoot it. Not like today, most guys can shoot it, you know, with the sticks they use and everything. But, you know, some of the guys that you wouldn't, there's the obvious guys that could score, you know, like Hull and LaFleur and Marcel Dion and guys like that. But there was a guy that played. He was from Cleveland, a guy by the name of Doug Vollmer. He had probably the heaviest wrist shot that I've ever felt. I mean, it hits you like a bullet. And then another guy was Reed Larson. He had a slap shot. I mean, he could blow it by a goalie from the blue line on a pretty regular basis. But there were a bunch of guys could shoot it, but not as many guys as can today.
All right. How did you start your managerial career? Like, how does that happen where you decide you want to go in that direction And people may not even know you were in Windsor. Cam played in Windsor.
Yeah.
You coached there. You were a GM there too. So is that kind of how it began? Like, break that down for us.
Nope. I wanted to stay in the game, but when I retired, I think in 82, and it was like in February of 82. That last year I signed back with Detroit. They had two young goalies, Greg Steffen and Karata Mikulov. Neither one had played an NHL game, so they signed me in case one of them wasn't ready. And to their good fortune, they both played extremely well. And so I was kind of the third goalie, and then they sent me to the minors, and I said, well, you don't need me. So I was done in February. And it was a couple of months later where I got contacted by CompuWare Hockey, a guy by the name of can't think of his name now. I'm drawing a blank here, but he ran CompuWare Hockey Club. It was Mark Craig. I'm sorry. And he's a friend of mine. I'm sorry I drew a blank.
Come on now, Mark.
I do it every day.
How good I'm a friend 36. Is Mark? You know what Mark feels? Mark feels like shit now.
Jimmy,
you know
I'm 36 years old. I do it every day. You're good, buddy.
Well, he won't. He'll be okay. And so Pete Karmanis obviously ran CompuWare, and they wanted me to go run a goalie school. It was really at the start of the time where there were specialty schools, goalie schools being one of them. And they said, you know, we've had a lot of success in youth hockey, a lot of success in hockey schools, but we want to run a specialty goalie school. We want you to run it, and we'll try to get 20 goalies. So it ends up we get 40 goalies. It was very successful. Pete Karmanis came to a few of those workouts, and he grabbed me at the end of the week. He said, what are you doing? And I said, I really don't know. I'm feeling my way. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. And he said, well, this was Friday of Labor Day. He says, come to my office the day after Labor Day and I'll talk to you. And so I went. I'm coming off my last year in the NHL, I think making $175,000, which in those days was a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, I'm going to offer you a job. I'll give you benefits and $24,000. I said, good, I'm in. And I know a lot of guys I played with would not. They would say, you know, I'd like to make more money than that. So I was there a couple of months, and he came to me and said, look, I want to grow my hockey program. I want to get an OHL franchise. I want you to be the point person. Go and try to find a franchise. And as luck would have it, Windsor was going into bankruptcy, so it was fortunate that we could get a franchise right next to Detroit so he could come and enjoy the games. And so anyways, he bought Windsor at the time, and we had some success with Windsor. The fourth year we were there, we won Ontario, 12 wins, no losses through Ontario. And then we went on the Memorial Cup. We won every game until the final game. We lost the final game.
But
right after that, he said to me, he says, I want to get an NHL franchise, and you're the point guy. You're gonna find one, and you'll be the general manager. And so I started looking. We looked at 7 or 8 teams. Nothing came up. We applied for expansion in St. Petersburg, the same expansion that Tampa was awarded the franchise. Mm-hmm. Then a couple of years after that, the Hartford Whalers. And so he bought Hartford, and I was the general manager. And my NHL career, that's where it started.
And weren't you part owner too, though? I mean, you were part owner and general manager. Like, I mean, has that happened before? Like, can you think of another GM in the league who was also the owner of the team?
No, I can't. And I was also part owner with the Windsor franchise, but that was just the way he did business. He was a wonderful guy, very loyal man. And he always, you know, I pointed out to you how much he gave me my first year there, but he wanted to see whether I wanted to work or not. Are you a professional athlete that thinks you just want a job, but you don't want to work, or do you want to work? And then when he saw that I was willing to work, then he starts to say, okay, I'm going to pay you more, and I'm going to make you a part of these things. He'd give you an opportunity to grow into something that could be very successful. So he was very, very good to me.
Isn't it funny how when you do retire and you have a successful career, sometimes you just feel like you're, you should be awarded another job, no matter what it is. Like, I played NHL. No, I should do radio now. Like, it just doesn't work that way, to be honest with you. But hey, how cool is Windsor though? I played there. So maybe I should thank you for like kickstarting my career coming from Eureka, Missouri, living with an 85-year-old couple, which I did, and I sucked it up. And so, I mean, how cool is that town? We have so many listeners from Windsor that listen to this podcast right now, but playing in that town, they love you. And that small barn, Jimmy, no one could hide in there.
Nobody could hide. And if you had the right makeup of a team, your the visiting team was hard to come in and win a game. But I loved Windsor, you know. I it was just 4 years that I really enjoyed. I took over a team that wasn't very good. And over that period of time, which it's a cycle in junior hockey anyways, every 4 years. But we just improved every year. That year that we lost in the Memorial Cup in the final game, it was actually, I think we were winning by 2 goals with 6 minutes left, and we lost in regulation to Medicine Hat. But we had won 37 out of our last 38 games going into that final game.
Wow. So wait, who'd you have? Was that Adam Graves' team and like Glenn Featherstone and those guys? Like
God. Adam Graves, Featherstone, the Shannon brothers, Kelly Kane, David Haas. I mean, we had a really, really good team. You know, it's funny because I learned a lot, as you should, as you're going along, but Adam Graves was the guy that had the most successful NHL career, but he was the third line left winger on that team.
Oh, how many times did you try to get him in Carolina?
Not too many, because I knew it wasn't possible. I mean, I tried one time, but it wasn't going to happen. He's one of my favorite guys. He's such a wonderful person, but it was, that team was built on balance, and that's what I learned for NHL teams too. I mean, when you look at our good teams in 16 and 17, Kessel played on our third line, but he was one of the real impact players and made a huge difference in those two teams.
The Cam and Strick podcast is brought to you by CarShield. You know, nothing more frustrating, Cam, than when that engine light comes on and you know right off the bat you're going to have to spend thousands of dollars to repair your vehicle. Call 800-857-2481. Mention the promo code CAM or visit carshield.com. And use the code CAM to save 10%. Yeah. That's carshield.com. A deductible may apply. Save yourself money. Cam. Sign up and get your coverage now with carshield.com. Cam. Now back to the interview. All right, since you brought up Phil Kessel, we're just going to bounce around here. I might as well ask about him, though. Like, what was your impression of him before you got him? And then what did you learn about him after you got him? Because, you know, he obviously carried a reputation when he came from Toronto, and it turned around quickly once he became a winner.
What I knew about him before I got him was he was a very talented player, probably one of the best passers in the game. Everybody talked about his shot and how he could score, but he can pass the puck as good as anybody and make plays in the league. And then other than that, I didn't know much about him, because there are just all these stories out there. And you know, what do you believe? You can only believe so many of the stories about people. So I just thought that when he became available, that he could first come to Pittsburgh and not be the guy and have all the pressure on him. And then also, if he played the way he's capable, take some of the pressure off Sid and Gino. And so anyways, we got him. And then when we got him, I learned a lot about him. I got to know him. I think he's a very misunderstood person. I think he's a wonderful guy. He knows the game inside out. He knows all the players. He knows the rules. He's a hockey encyclopedia, if you want to sit down and talk to him about hockey. If you sat with him after a game, he could, without looking at video, he could go through that game and tell you exactly what happened, you know, the good things and the bad things, not just for him, but the whole game. And he really wanted to win. So he was he was a great addition. Everybody contributed to the Stanley Cup in many ways, but he was an impact player for Pittsburgh in 16 and 17. And to this day, I really like the guy. You know, I trade guys, I feel bad about it, but in the cap system, you have to trade guys like that because you have to stay within the cap. So anyways, I see he's still scoring goals for Arizona. He's got 8 or 9 goals this year, which isn't bad.
Yeah. No,
well,
it's
when
not
you play
bad.
In Toronto and you get ragged on that much, mm-hmm. you're like, no, I need to become a winner after that. Yeah. It's tough.
But they make such a big deal out of certain guys though too, right? They just find the guy. It's Nylander now is all of a sudden starting to score where they were on him though. Like last week. All right, so yeah, you're in Florida or Hartford, I should say.
Big difference.
Like, what's going on in Hartford? Like, did you just know when you're there, okay, this probably is not going to work long term? Like, when did you start to realize that?
Well, the way that the sale of the team was structured, it was structured for the team to leave, quite frankly. I mean, I think Pete Kermanis bought it for like $22 million, and then it was really the price of the team was $80 million, but it was $22 million in cash, and then the losses for the next 4 years would go towards the $80 million. And if you got over the $80 million in losses, you had the right to leave the team, leave the city. And so it was almost, you know, the people that put together that deal was almost saying, you know, go ahead. So we were in the third year and we said, you know, the arena was not going to work. You have to get a modern arena to make this work. And if you can do that, you know, we could keep up with the revenue streams of other teams. And so the governor was a year away from an election. If we waited till the fourth year, we'd already hit the threshold of the losses. If we waited till the fourth year, the sports team would be leaving town in an election year. So I think that it was easier from the governor's point of view for the team to leave after year three than after year four. It's unfortunate because, first of all, a couple of things happened to Hartford. The insurance industry started to merge and move out of town, wasn't as big, and that was a big driver for the team in the 80s from a revenue point of view, and they're very supportive. But they had a pretty good fan base in Hartford and a lot of great fans. But the other issue for Hartford was when we were there, well, still the same now, but, you know, the location being between Boston and New York. But when we were there, you had several teams from both cities being televised in that market. I don't think it's the same now because I think either Boston has the green light or New York. I'm not sure. But anyway, so the competition for sports was in some ways very high, only even that we were the only major league team in town. But I feel bad about Hartford because there were a lot of very dedicated people there, some business people that worked hard to keep it there. But at the end of the day, when they did the numbers on the arena, the numbers just weren't going to work for a team to stay there, and the team had to move.
Yeah, well, the players seem to have a lot of fun there, like off the ice and whatever, like in Hartford. But all right, so how'd the Pronger trade happen to St. Louis? I mean, there's like an urban legend around here that you and Keenan had talked in a hotel about maybe potentially the landscape of a deal, like that they may have even offered you a job as a goalie coach or something like that before that, somebody told, which I don't even know if that's ever true, but how did that trade happen for Chris Pronger and Brendan Shanahan to find his way to Hartford?
Yeah, well, none of that, that's true, okay. The first part. None of that.
Good job, Andy. Good job, Andy.
So we can clear that up.
Good.
What happened was, and I recognized how good Chris Pronger was at such a young age and how great a career he was going to have. But the year before I got there, there were some off-ice issues that happens to young guys, okay? Mm-hmm. And
I wouldn't know.
And and it wasn't very well received publicly, okay? And so I got a call. Mike Keenan made the first call. I was not shopping Chris Pronger. Mike Keenan made the call, and I think for that very reason, knowing that there was a possibility of a deal, and he offered Brendan Shanahan. And then, you know, went through the process, looking at it and thinking about it. Shanahan was older, obviously, but certainly coming to Hartford gave us a lot of credibility, adding a guy like Brendan. And so we ended up making the deal. And Brendan, and I've said this to him before, and of course he's had Stanley Cup years in Detroit, but probably had his best year personally in Hartford. Because the year he had 47 goals, he played most of the year with a broken wrist and scored 47 goals. So the fact that he had the bad wrist, you know, if you put that in the equation, it's probably the best season he had as a player personally. But then it got to the point that he wasn't happy there, and he was stirring things up with me and, you know, didn't feel he wanted to stay there. And so it got to the point that we had to move him, and eventually did move him to Detroit. I don't know what that whole deal was. I know Keith Primo was part of the deal coming back.
So what was he doing to stir things up? I mean, like he didn't want to be there. Is that the story?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't do anything bad. He was just one-on-one with me and the agent calling, just saying, look, I don't like it here. And if you can move me out, please do it. And so I accommodated him.
Okay, what's that like? Well, we're seeing this all over the place now in sports. I mean, guys want to be traded, they get moved. Like when a young player like tells you what they want out and they want to be moved, like do you feel like you have to accommodate the player? Like how do you handle that? Like how much experience have you had with that, Jimmy?
I haven't had a lot of experience with it. Very few guys. Paul Coffey was another guy I had in Hartford. He wanted out. But I haven't had much experience with guys that I've had that want out. But I think that you have to tell them that you will look at it, tell them it's going to take a little time, and hope that they calm down and settle back in. But understanding that once they've decided they want out, they probably have one foot out the door. And if you can make a good deal for them, you probably should do it.
All right. So one thing you've always been good at, like you may look at a trade on paper, Jim, and say, wow, why would they make that deal? And then all of a sudden you see that player come and he like fits the team like a glove. There's like a role for him. You can look at like Carl Hagelin and some of these guys in terms of how they helped you win. So how do you view trades and how hard is it for you to do? Like, are you emotionally connected to guys that you move and how do you handle that from a personality standpoint and just dealing with relationships?
I'm emotionally connected to guys that I win a championship with. And Marc-Andre Fleury trade was the hardest one for me because I love the guy. And he was great to my son. When they come in and lost their first game, when he came back in with Vegas, they lost 5-1. And my son wanted to go and see him. And I said, no, leave him alone. And I'm sitting in my office with my son, and he sent somebody to get my son to come and see him. And he spent 15 minutes with him after he had lost that game. Man. He's a special, very special person and obviously a special player. But you get emotionally attached to the guys you win championships with. Kessel is another one. A lot of guys have gone out of here that we won with. But I view trades that sometimes you have to make a trade to make a statement to the team. Sometimes you have to make them on a long, on a bigger picture long term, that they're fitting into what you're trying to do. But I also make trades understanding that it should work for both sides, and sometimes it's not going to work for us. And I make a lot of trades, so I'm not going to get them all right. When I don't get one right, I'm not afraid to say it, and I move on. I move the player out in a different deal and move on. So as long as you're not trying to make trades to always win the trade, you can make enough trades to make your team better.
Yeah, I mean, because you had the expansion draft, and Matt Murray's coming off of like Stanley Cups. I mean, how much did you think about that? Like, did you know at the time, Jimmy, when you're making this deal with Marc-Andre Fleury, he's moving on? Did you feel like in the back of your mind, this is going to come back to haunt us? Like, did you think like that?
Oh, I knew he had lots left in him. And in Fleury's case, when he knew that he was the odd guy out, he came and met with me and said, if there's any way you can get me to Las Vegas, that's where I'd like to go. And so I made sure I made that happen. I felt I owed that to him. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have to think long about who we were keeping, mm-hmm. because it was all about the cap. You know, I mean, Fleury was going to make $2.5 million more on the cap, and that's a lot of money. And that's where the decision was made. And the same thing just happened this past year where, you know, you got Jari coming as a younger guy. Murray's the older guy. He was 1 year away from being unrestricted, and he was going to make a lot more money. And basically the same thing, almost the same numbers. Murray's cap hit now is $6 million, and Jari's is 3.5, you know. So $2.5 million on the cap. It's a lot of money when you're a cap team and you have stars on your team.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
What's your take on the salary cap? Having managed all those years with no cap in a non-traditional hockey market versus operating under a salary cap with true superstars on your roster, how do you look at it?
Well, I think it's, unfortunately now with COVID, the cap's flat and it's not continuing to go up. But I think the new system that the league put in was a good system. It was fair. The players still continue to make more money. Their salaries grew. And it was a safety net to protect all the franchises. And that's important to the players also, because you don't want to lose franchises if teams are going out of business. So the new system is good. It certainly makes it harder for the managers, much harder right now when the cap was reduced to 81.5, and now it's going to be flat for the next couple of years. So the managers have their work cut out for them. We did last year. Going into next year and the next couple of years, it's going to be hard. You'll see some good players get moved around. Of course, Seattle's going to gobble up some of them, which will level things off.
All right, you mentioned your emotional connection with all these players. So Crosby, Malkin, obviously the face of your championships, right, in terms of how big a superstars yeah. they are.
Yeah.
So what's your relationship with those guys? Like, do you feel like you have to treat them differently than the rest of the players on the team because they're so big? And what was your interaction with them over the years? How close were you guys?
Most of the interaction was done through Mike Sullivan. I was aware of what was going on all the time. I try not to get too close to the players, but close enough that they know that they can come to me with any issues that they have. Sid is a guy that I wouldn't bother. He's a very focused guy, but there are a couple of times during the year, especially in the off season, I'd have lunch with him and just get his opinion of what he felt of the year. He's the captain of the team. He's the leader. He's the best player in the game. And that was always important to me to hear what he thought, what our needs were, and what he thought of the season. With Gino, Gino's more of a quiet guy, probably a little bit misunderstood, but he really cares and he really wants to win. And I don't have a lot of communication with him, but I will say that when I stepped down and resigned a month ago, I got a very heartfelt email from Gino, which was unexpected, but I really appreciate it.
Okay, so without giving it away, because it is personal, like what did he say? What can you tell us that he said? Like, I mean, just in terms of, because that's got to be unbelievable, Jimmy, to hear that from a player when you don't really expect it and you're leaving, your emotions are already high, and then to get that from a player has got to be, I mean, just heartfelt.
Yeah. I think it's just, I won't get into details. I just think it's about the relationship that I had, how I handle players, and that they knew that I had their back and I was there for them all the time, regardless what happened. And then of course the fact that we won a couple of championships together, you have that bond with those players forever.
That's a great feeling though. Absolute great feeling. And, we hear great things about Crosby and Malkin, and you're right. He is somewhat misunderstood.
Hey, let's talk about the new Bud Light Seltzer.
Oh, yeah.
It's an easy-drinking, hard seltzer that comes in four delicious fruit flavors. Mm. Black cherry, ooh, strawberry, yes, lemon lime, and Cam's favorite, mango.
Oh, mango.
With only 100 calories, 5% alcohol, and less than a gram of sugar, mm-hmm, you might as well have a few tonight or this weekend. Mm. Go to BudLight.com to buy Bud Light Seltzer online. Must be 21 years of age or older. Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good.
Yeah.
Now back to the interview.
But go back to Carolina, though. And I remember you guys, I was playing for the Devils at the time, and you guys absolutely smoked us in the second round. But I remember playing, and I mean, the place is jam packed. Everybody's wearing red. You got cheerleaders going. I remember pulling up to the rink. Everything's so beautiful out in North Carolina. You pull up, people are like playing football. It's like a football game. Everybody gets there like 5 hours early. Like, describe that setup and winning the cup in Carolina. The place is so cool. And I talk to people, and they love playing there too.
Well, you know, they love to tailgate. They'd get there hours before the game, and they'd enjoy themselves. They'd get together with other people, you know, like a block party, and have a few drinks and barbecue and everything like that. So it was really exciting in those runs in the playoffs, but it's a great market. You know, unfortunately, when we first went there, it was on such short notice. You know, it was decided in like, I think April or May of that year. And we were playing in Greensboro that following fall, no lead up to it like you need to have when you're going into a new city. So it was a slow start getting the franchise going, but certainly as it's gotten going, I think it's a great market for the NHL, and those playoff runs were just great. People were really into it. You know, the final game we had in 06 with Edmonton, the fans stood the whole game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like UConn basketball. I think their tradition is the fans stand until they score the first basket. Well, that doesn't take long, but the fans in this case at a hockey game were standing for 3 hours and cheering their team on. It was really special.
What's it like being the manager of a franchise for that long though? Like, was it almost too long, Jimmy? Like, how do you keep it fresh when you're with one team for so long?
Well, whether you're with one team or not, or you're just a manager a long time, what I tried to do is give guys a job right after they retired. Like you look in Carolina, it was Glenn Wesley at one point, and Ronnie Francis and Rod Brind'Amour. So they're sharing with me their ideas of how the game is changing. In Pittsburgh just recently, I give Trevor Daly a position, and then it was Matt Cullen before that. And I think it's really important for a manager that's been around a long time, because our game changes almost every 2 or 3 years. But yeah, it was a long time. And of course, I was running the business side and the hockey side. A lot of ups and downs. But, you know, you just you stick with it. Like, it was probably 4 years prior to me stepping down in Carolina that I was telling Pete Carmanis, so, you know, I think I've had enough. And he kept saying, no, just keep going. And then when I stepped down in Carolina, I thought that I had enough. And it was only a matter of a week later that Pittsburgh called. And then that's all history now.
You've been doing this for so long. I can only imagine the contract negotiations, the battles with guys.
Yeah.
Like, does one come to mind? Like, who's a player that was really difficult to negotiate
Stickler.
With?
Yeah.
Well, they're all difficult. I mean,
I wasn't.
Cam, what's the league minimum?
Cam, I'm giving you a two-way deal, $500. Okay, thank you. You would love me.
That's the kind of guy I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Who scores 30?
Iron.
That doesn't happen very often. It did happen this year because guys were afraid that they weren't going to get jobs back. And, you know, you get a few of those guys this year. But for the most part, the agents are just doing their job, and they negotiate hard. My relationship with agents pretty good. I've had some pretty good arguments with a few guys over the years. I mean, that's pretty standard for a guy that's been a GM for 25 years. But those negotiations get pretty hard. And the problem is, the manager is focused on how a number fits into the cap.
Yeah.
And you got your projections for each guy. And when you get off base on just one guy, that can throw everything out of whack. All of a sudden, now you got to give this guy an extra million or an extra 500,000. And that means there's another guy over here that you may not be able to sign now. So that's why it gets pretty tense for a manager. The agent's just doing his job. He's just trying to get as much as he can for a player. And he's not worried about how the team's structured and what the cap is.
So you have to deal with a lot of different GMs as well and trades and things like that. And one name comes to my mind who I absolutely adore is Lou Lamoriello. And, you know, that guy has just been great for me. But as far as like dealing with a guy like that, I mean, what's your take with him? And he's a stickler and he's got his mindset for what he wants. So explain how you dealt with him and how you guys get along.
Well, we get along great. He's one of my very good friends. And, I have so much respect for what he's done and what he's still doing. We didn't have a lot of dealings on player trades. We talked different times. We talked over the years different things that were going on in the league. And especially over these last couple of years with everything that's going on in the world, we've even talked more. But Lou's one of my very favorite people in the game.
All right, so what do you think about dealing with the veteran GMs? I mean, guys like Doug Armstrong, Kenny Holland, you know, David Poyle, who's been around forever. Obviously, Cam just mentioned Lou, versus some of the young guys that have been coming in. Like, do you notice a difference? Is it more difficult to get a deal done or to work with some of these younger guys? How do you look at it?
Well, I think sometimes you sense, whether it's a younger guy or a veteran guy, sometimes you sense that a guy's maybe afraid a little bit to make a mistake. And then that deal becomes harder. But, you know, when guys were with me like Billy Guerin and Jason Botterill and Fitzy and those guys working their way to be general manager, you know, we would talk about different deals. I remember one day talking to Billy Guerin, and we would talk about this deal and Billy would have his ideas and different guys would have their ideas. And, you know, you should try to get an extra pick or you should try to get a second round pick instead of a fourth or whatever. And I said, guys, when you do these deals, it's got to be fair for both sides. You know, don't try to win a deal too bad. Try to make it fair for both sides. That doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes you lose a deal. Sometimes you win a deal. But when you're making it, the important thing is that you think it's fair for both sides.
What about Army here in St. Louis? You guys see eye to eye, you and Doug?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I talk to him a lot, even up to this day. He's a good friend and he's a great hockey guy and he loves to talk hockey and he's on top of things. He knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the real good ones.
Yeah. No,
he'll be listening to this pod.
Oh, yeah, he will. He came on with us. He was unbelievable. And like so much respect for that guy.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So why did you personally recommend Ron Hextall to replace you?
I knew the Hextall family back to when I played. I played with his father. And when Ron Hextall was 5 or 6 years old, I used to come home from practice, get on my hands and knees and play ball hockey with him because we lived in the same apartment complex. And so I knew that family for a long time. I followed his career. I loved him as a goalie. And I love the work he did as a GM. Him and I sat beside each other at GM's meetings because we go in alphabetical order. Mm-hmm. But I really had a lot of respect for what he did in Philadelphia. He was building piece by piece that franchise, and he really built the foundation for what the Flyers team is today. Of course, Chuck Fletcher came in. And he made some trades and he improved it to get it to where it is now, to mold it. But Hexie really did a good job there. And so over the last couple of years, talking with David Morehouse, we'd talk a little bit about, you know, and eventually that I would not be the GM. What would I do? And who I thought should come in for me. And I told him for 2 years, Ron Hextall. And even after I stepped down, a couple of days after I stepped down, David called me and he said, you know, making lots of calls, getting a lot of names. And he says, who's your recommendation? I said, well, it hasn't changed. It's Ron Hextall. And then when they announced it was him, I was really happy that he got it.
Yeah, no, he was great when he came on with us. Also, yeah, love awesome. That conversation, yep. and happy to see him get another job. All right, so what's he inheriting in Pittsburgh? Because some, Jim, I know you hear the criticism. They say no prospects, no draft picks. They've got some contracts they're going to have to make some tough decisions on. So what's he inheriting in Pittsburgh now?
Well, I don't hear a lot of the stuff because I don't read all the different things and whatnot, but. You know, I traded a lot of first round draft picks to give this group a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And we got something to show for it. We got two Stanley Cups. And the fact of the matter is, if we'd have kept the first round picks, those are players that would not have been on the team helping Sidney Crosby win a Stanley Cup. Mm. So it was the right thing to do. It was approved by ownership. They understood what I was doing. But a couple of years ago, they were talking about how the team's getting older and, you know, don't have any younger players. But if you look at that team today, they have a really good young defense. John Marino, Matheson, Pettersson, Joseph. These guys could play in Pittsburgh for a long time. Like, I think Pittsburgh's young defense is right up there with most teams, and we did that without having first round picks. And then there's some guys that are still under 30 that are still good players, you know, the Gunsels, the Zuckers. Kapanen's only 24, and there's some young players coming. There's not a lot of young players coming, but if you're just building on younger players when you're trying to win Stanley Cups, you're not going to do it because they're not going to be able to jump in the lineup quick enough to help that core guys like Crosby and Malkin and Letang and those guys.
All right. So when you resign from a job like that, Jimmy, like how do you know? Like how much time do you give yourself to really think about it before you come to that decision where you tell the team, hey, I'm stepping down? Like walk us through that. How difficult is that to do?
Well, it may not be the case that you're just thinking about doing it at a certain time. It's in my case, it was probably things that I was thinking about that were going on, you know, maybe for a year. And then it just got to a point in a certain meeting that I said, you know, that's now it's time. So that's probably about as much as I can say about it.
Mm. And the night, like, does it feel like you're getting fired even though you're stepping down on your own? Like, what are those first couple days like?
No, it doesn't feel like you're getting fired because you get fired, it comes out of the blue. It's somebody else's decision. Well, the first couple of days are emotional. Like, it was, the best way to describe it was like being at a funeral because those first couple of days I got texts and emails and calls probably from twice as many people than I expected to. I probably have more friends in the game than I even realized, which I'm really proud of. But you know, at a funeral, people come and they say, oh, wasn't he a nice guy? Or, you know, thank you for doing this for me. Or, you know, remember when we did this? But you're gone. You're in the casket. You can't respond to them. Mm. In this case, it was something that came to an end. And I was hearing all these things from people, all these nice things, but I was actually here to hear them. And so that's how the first 2 days felt. And then time went along and, you know, we went through this COVID thing and you know, my son not going to school and not playing hockey and all that. And I got vaccinated shortly after I stepped down, and now we're getting back to a normal way of life. But I think the quarantine and COVID wore on me a lot and maybe wore me down a little bit. But with the vaccination now and that behind me and had a month to think about it, I'm refreshed and I'm getting kind of antsy again.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, all your right. wife wants you out. We know that.
No Jim. Doubt about it. Well, you're not cooking. So then she's like, what are we doing here? But I think everybody was worried about you. I mean, everybody was very surprised, and they're probably like, well, are you okay? And, mm-hmm. and they that's why, you know, you just know the hockey community is great. When you've been in the game that long yeah. and, you know, you kind of go out like that, they guys worry about you, man. You did mm-hmm. a lot for a lot of yep. people, Jimmy. Damn.
Well, it's on, you know, part of the issue was the way the press release was worded. They said for personal
yeah.
reasons. Mm-hmm. And when you say that, the first thing everybody thinks is he's sick or is a family member sick. So that was the first question I got from everybody that texted me or called me. And then once that got out of the way, all the people said, I really don't care what happened. I just want to make sure you're okay.
Time to talk about our boy, Dan Bellman. Ooh. Bellman.com. That's with two N's, not one. BehlmannN.com. Hey, check out the new inventory. Check out the pre-owned vehicles. You looking for a Chrysler, a Dodge, a Jeep, a Ram? How about a Cadillac or a Buick GMC? All in Troy, Missouri. Get your new wheels in time for the winter. Now back to the interview. Okay, so you're 72, and you've already come out and said that you want to get back in. Now, why do you want to get back in, Jimmy?
Yeah, chill,
as opposed
Jimmy.
To just kicking your feet back up. Yeah, and what's more appealing to you? Is it to get back and manage, or do you see Brian Burke step in as a president, JD, some of these other guys that do that? Would that be appealing to you as well?
Well, let's back up first. what I wanted to make sure was that people understood that I wasn't retiring at that point in time. So now I'm still under contract with Pittsburgh till June. I want to take these months just to think about where I'm at in my life, what I want to do. And I may very well say in July that I'm going to retire. So, but I wanted to make it clear that that wasn't final at that point. But to your point, if I do decide to work again and go back with the team, president of hockey operations is something I would consider. It was something in Pittsburgh that I had told David Morehouse for a couple of years that I would consider doing. So, you know, it could be as a GM, it could be president of hockey operation, it could be a smaller role and just be an advisor with some team.
Well, what needs to take place for you to make that decision? If you go back home, you're sick of looking at your beautiful landscape. Maybe your boat doesn't work right now because you got to get it fixed. You're like, you know what? I'm bored. I want to start doing this. But if you go back and you kick your feet up and you relax, you're just like, you know what? I'm going to chill.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I watch all the games every night to stay on top of the players and know what's going on. I think the biggest thing will be is, first of all, somebody is going to have interest in me to do something. And if that's the case, does it make sense for them? And does it make sense for me? I do not want somebody's job. I'm not going to make calls and to some team that's not doing well this year and say, you know, I'd like to be your GM. That I don't need. I've done enough in this game. But if there's an opening, you know, a position that opens up, as you suggested, like president of hockey operations, and it's with the right team and makes sense for my family, I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, just
well,
a few more minutes.
You came on the right,
yeah.
right podcast for that, by the way.
We get
Jimmy.
Jobs. We get people so jobs, know. Jimmy. Your phone's going to be okay. ringing off the hook tomorrow, just so you know. People will be calling. No,
seriously.
Hey, and first off, I love the fact that you have this this managerial tree. I mean, you should be really proud of that,
yeah,
Jimmy.
Big time.
First off, you know, like we hear about that in football all the time, the coaching tree and hockey as well, man. But for you to have a tree as a GM, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, we got Ron Francis, Billy Guerin, Jason Botterill, Fitzy, and then the coaches that I started out were Paul Maurice and Peter DeBoer.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you coach Peter DeBoer?
I
had Peter DeBoer in Windsor in junior hockey. He was a 6th-round pick.
Look at that.
I remember it like it was yesterday. At the end of training camp, that first training camp, he's a young guy, 17 years old. Him and his mom and dad and him were standing out in the lobby. They wanted to talk to me. And he didn't think he made the team coming out of camp, and he didn't think he wanted to stay. He was too young, and I just think I want to go home. And so I convinced him that was not the right thing to do. And so he stayed. He was a good junior. He was a really good junior. And then when he finished, you know, we brought him back into the CompuWare hockey family, and he started coaching, I believe, with the junior wings is where he started.
Damn, I wish I would have known that when he coached me that he wanted to quit at an early age. I wish I would have had that material. Great guy. Hey, he's a great coach, too. I love him.
He is. He sure is.
What's your relationship like with Mario? Like, how involved is he on the hockey side? Like, is he coming down? Are you guys talking lineup decisions, all that type of stuff? Does he stay out of that? What was it like working side-by-side with him?
It was the best. It was the best thing happened in my career. He's the classiest person and hockey guy that I've met. And to this day, I feel the same way. He didn't interfere very much. He used to just always say, Jim, if you make a trade, just, you know, give me a heads up before I read it somewhere. And if you want to talk about anything, give me a call. And I did. I would call him periodically and say, look, here's the situation. You got any advice? But at no time did he ever interfere. His suggestions were always really good. He is the classiest guy going in the game.
Yeah. No surprise.
Actually, it's funny how Wayne and Mario are like the two classiest.
They're so
guys.
Perfect. They're so perfect. Okay, Jimmy, you know you got to answer this. Help me know. Now, the rumor is, whatever, that you wanted to trade Chris Letang. Is this a bad report? Is that a good rumor, a bad rumor, and that the organization wouldn't let you do it? Is that accurate?
Nope, not accurate. As a matter of fact, I've said publicly a few times, because you get to a point in the player's career, should you trade them and get something younger for them or not? But I've actually took the position that because the core guys won Stanley Cups, three Stanley Cups at Crosby, Malkin, and Letang should play their whole career in Pittsburgh. And I wish I could say the same thing about Fleury, but we got squeezed on the cap at an earlier time. But those four guys should have played their whole career in Pittsburgh. But there's three of them still there. That's how I felt then. That's how I feel now.
Okay,
I get that.
So why did you step down? And do you feel like you made the right decision after now giving it several weeks?
I'm not going to say why I stepped down. I don't totally know if I made the right decision. I would say in the meeting I had, it was a little uncharacteristic of me, of how I handled the meeting. But there were, it wasn't just about the meeting. It was, I'll just leave it at that. It was just uncharacteristic of me as the way the meeting went.
Did you lose your temper, Jimmy?
Did the old
goalie come out?
Jimmy, remember who you're talking to. Okay. It's all good.
I did not lose my temper. No, okay. I did not. I was in full control of my thoughts.
Okay.
All right.
You just maybe said some things. Maybe you listen. It's an emotional time.
I yell at Andy all the damn time.
People may not know, all the kids out there. Are you the first one to ever have a design on your helmet?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. His buddy did it.
I don't know. That's debatable. Somebody has said there was somebody else ahead of me or not. But no. The story with that was, when I played in Pittsburgh, I had a blue mask. That was their color then, you know, that light blue.
Oh yeah.
And I was hurt at the time. I'd been out with the knee ligaments, and I was out for about 6 weeks. And Ken Schinkel, the coach, kept coming to me for a week, and he said, "We got this big game in St. Louis next week. I really hope you're ready." And he'd ask me every day, and I'd say, "No, I'm not ready." The day before the St. Louis game, he says, "I need you to play in St. Louis tomorrow night. Are you ready?" And I said, "No, I'm not, but I will play." And so we didn't fly charter in those days. And I was in the back seat of a full plane getting ready to take off to St. Louis. And he gets on the plane. He tells me to come and see him. He said, "We just traded you to Detroit." And so off the plane I went. Detroit was playing in Toronto the next night. I called the mask maker and said, you know, of course, when you're traded, you're upset, you're emotional. I said, "Just paint the mask white, not red. just paint it white for tomorrow's game. And he picked it up at the airport, takes it, brings it in the morning skate, pulls it out of the box. It's got these wings on it. And I said, what are you doing? What are you thinking? So anyways, I had no other choice. I wore it that night. We won the game. It was the talk of the game. I kept it after that.
The rest is history. You set that trend.
Trendsetter.
You are a trendsetter. Hey, were the boys giving you crap though? We're like, oh my, because you know how sensitive it is when you walk in that locker room and then you put that mask on. Were the boys all over you?
No, they liked it a lot more than I did.
Oh,
they thought it was pretty exciting. They couldn't wait to ding it up with puck marks. Shooting at my head in practice.
And if you have a bad haircut and you walk in the locker room, the guys are going to torture you. But you get your face mask painted, they don't care. Funny how that works.
Hey, Jimmy, listen.
You're the best, Jimmy.
I appreciate you coming on. Best to you. I hope you just get to – are you in Pittsburgh? Is that where you stay now? Is that where you're staying?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we still have our home in Carolina. My daughter teaches school there, so we like to spend time there. But we're in Pittsburgh right now.
Carolina's beautiful, though.
I know.
Are you in the mountains looking over, like, the hills? Like,
He's in Raleigh. No, I'm right in Raleigh, right?
Raleigh's beautiful.
Yeah, we like it there, but we like Pittsburgh a lot. We've been treated great here. I love the people in Pittsburgh. It's just a wonderful sports town. And so this is a little bit of a tough time thinking about leaving.
Yeah.
I hear you, man.
Well, listen,
great.
I get it. You do sound good.
Yeah.
And all the best. Stay healthy and get that second shot and all the best to your son as he develops as a hockey player.
Wish your family
too,
good luck. So. Yeah, with everything, man. Thanks for coming on, Jimmy.
Thanks. I enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye. See you, buddy. Cool cat, man. Big boy. Shit. I can't believe you even came on with us, man. Like, why would these guys love it, man? He just let it out. It's a therapy session, and we're cool with
it. But a great track record, long track record.
Yeah.
Goes all the way back to Windsor, but even before that as an NHL goaltender. Yeah. Does that mean more to you that if the GM had a playing background, would it matter to you at all? Did you look at Lou any different because of that?
Fuck no.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking that far, I didn't even know.
Like,
people
probably don't even remember.
Dude, listen to me.
They're going to be reminded, like, what? Jim Rutherford played in the NHL for as long as he did?
A coach might be different.
Mm-hmm.
But a GM, you're a GM already. And I'm an 18-year-old kid and you drafted me. I'm like,
no doubt.
I look up to all you guys no matter what.
Yeah.
Now, the coaching thing you'll understand once you get into the mix and he sits you out and you're like, and he tells you different things.
That's
you're like, what
different.
The fuck?
That
you're
is
like, what?
Different.
Like, I did. Wait, what are you talking
about? Yeah.
But a GM, like, I looked at Lou, I never questioned. No, God, not even. It's like the fucking Billet family thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is Kate, me and Kate, going to be a Billet? That's the question. That's the kind of the same answer I'm going to give
you. No, I think
you.
She's considering it. Kate would consider it.
Well,
they pay you.
That means that she doesn't like me anymore.
They pay you a little coin, too.
Oh, $200 a month. That's sick. I was spending fucking $200 a day on it. Fucking shit. Anyway, I hooked them all up, trust me. But... but no, I never thought, no, Lou is so, like, God, he's so accomplished. Like, how can you even think that? For Jimmy, no, but coaches may be different at the beginning.
Okay, what do you think, though?
At the beginning.
Like, stage. These old school GMs who are so accomplished, Lou, Kenny Holland, Doug Armstrong.
Dougie, the buddies.
Jim Rutherford.
All our buddies.
You know, Brian Burke, who's now a president, Berkey, whatever.
Yeah, we are.
You know, David Poyle's
boy,
been, in the, David Poyle's been
on.
In the game for
we
a long
him
time.
On too.
We'll get him on. Nashville's got their own issues right now.
I know.
They got a lot of bad contracts.
Tons of bad contracts.
I'm not happy about that, David, right now, just with the contracts and stuff. And my boy, you know, Luke Cunnan's on there. We got to make sure we're taking care of him.
If he's single, he's okay.
No, he's got a beautiful girlfriend. Has for a long time.
Good for her.
But all these, the old school GMs, I love to hear about their relationships with one another. I think there's a level of trust that they have with one another. And I wonder how they react to a lot of these younger guys. Mark Bergevin is a guy who gets along with a lot of the old school guys. He's been around forever.
Why do you think?
Yeah.
Why do you think he gets along more than Kyle Dubas?
Well, I'm not saying that they don't get along with Dubas, but I bet you
it's
different.
That was a case, why do you think it would be? Because of the playing factor, of course. Mm-hmm. They already know Mark Bergevin.
Correct.
They know everything about his personality, what he does there, how he's going to react. Mm-hmm. When you call him, he's going to chirp you off the bat. He's going to be funny, and then you're going to get into business.
Exactly.
Kyle Dubas is like, I'm going to This is what I'm going to do. I have numbers crunched, and I'm going to... And they're like, well, no, let's just talk real quick.
Are you chirping, Kyle Davis?
No, I didn't. No, I'm not chirping.
I used to have breakfast with him back in the day.
Well, you look just like him. Here's you look like you're fucking 22 years old. So when you call...
I like Kyle. We're getting him on, too.
We'll get him on. But I'm just saying, though, like, it's just like, if I'm Lou and I'm calling Kyle, I'm like, you listen to me, and you listen to me good. But if I'm Lou and I'm calling Jimmy Rutherford, I'm like, hey Jim, how you doing? How can we work this out? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Toronto, I mean, they really kicked Lou Lamoriello to the curb, basically. I mean, like,
who kicks him to the curb?
They brought in Kyle Dubas.
He did his thing there, and he's like, I'm on to the next. And now how's he doing?
Yeah.
He's doing pretty good. Fucking Islanders, one guy that with a big name, and they're fucking, and they have overpaid contracts.
Here's why I believe Jim Rutherford, because, you know, even at 72, like, he says his energy is good, he feels good, he's healthy, whatever, he feels strong.
How is that at 72? Well, man.
He knows exactly what he would be getting into.
Yeah, like a more of a presidential.
Well, I mean, no, he just knows what it takes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he knows what he wants,
so, like, he knows that. He knows what his capabilities are now, what he's capable of doing. Well, the GMs travel, though. You know,
well, he's not going to be a GM.
And they go overseas. And no, I think he would be open to a president job. And I think if I'm an owner, that's what I want him to be.
How about this, Jimmy? I'm going to pay you this amount. Mm-hmm. I want you on the conference calls. I want you to fly up here once in a while. I want you around the guys here and there. I want you around our team when we make big decisions. And I'm going to pay you this.
And so here's
Wouldn't
the thing.
That be cool?
You know, I could see Doug Armstrong, Kenny Holland, those guys eventually, before they're done, I could see them moving into a presidential role.
Oh, totally.
Or having somebody work under them.
Or how about this? How about a GM saying, we got a little bit of money. We need just an extra guy that's been here before to come stabilize our meetings.
Well,
or
whatever. Just say, hey, like, we're close.
Like, let me pick your fucking brain, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Get a fucking big brain. Come in here. Sit down with us. We're going to pay you here. You don't do too much, but let me pick your goddamn smart fucking brain.
Yeah. But he's got to have some autonomy, some.
Well, I'm just
he's
got to
be in charge, dude. He's not looking to just be like a consultant.
Well, somewhere. Why not? And get paid money to be a consultant?
Because I think he wants these guys like to run teams, dude. You know that.
Okay,
they like to be in charge.
At 72 years old, you want to run a team and be on the road every fucking... Fine.
As a president, he doesn't have to be.
Okay. As a president, you don't... Fine, I get that. But on the other hand, at that age, though, if you still want to be in the game and you don't have to have both feet in the fire... Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you just be a consultant and make money and do?
Well,
your
I'm
thing?
With you. I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think
you say
I think
he just
my
want that.
I think for some of these guys, like
he's
that's,
just like no, I need
no. The way he sounds, he wants to run a team. He's not looking just to kind of help out. I think for you and I, like if we had money in the bank at 72, like you wouldn't have to convince me just to go get a
Andy,
spot.
You're
in
sitting
the middle
in my
of nowhere,
basement.
You
we're
know
kicking
what
our fucking feet up, and we just got done playing.
And just
20,000
I would just be able to sit back and have no problem being like, "Wow,
make a phone
I
call.
Won 3 Stanley Cups. Yeah. I had a great career. I'm in the Hockey Hall of Fame."
I get you, man. And but these guys, like, they're not like us, though, Andy.
They're
we
not.
Talked about this morning. Me and you are the type of guys that we're going to bust our motherfucking ass. We're going to take care of our people, our family, your family. I'm taking care of Ty. I'm going to take care of the kids and Blay and maybe the wife once in a while. But the deal is...
What are you doing with Ty?
I'm going to take him as a son. And the dog, no. I'm going to... Because I get attached to people I'm close with. I get attached to their kids. Mm-hmm. Not everybody else's, but their kids.
This is interesting. Don't get too attached now. You can't.
Yeah, you don't want me around Ty, you out of your mind.
You got to make him tough.
I'm going to...
Although he already is. It's in his genes to be tough, okay?
You should pay me to come over to your fucking house and give you fucking shit.
Did
just
you
like
hear
when,
what I said? It's what? In Ty's genes to be tough. He's inherited that, okay? Toughness.
Was that Painter? Here's a point, though. I don't know, man. I just, me and you talked about this today. We bust our ass, take care of it. I want to kick my goddamn feet up and do podcasts and fucking chill in our house and do whatever the fuck we want and entertain our fans who love us and we fucking bring the heat for them every goddamn day. I will never stop doing that. But why would I want to travel and be annoyed and this, that, and the other? Like, I just, if I had enough coin, I wouldn't want to do that. But I always want to entertain people.
I think being president of hockey operations may be the best job in hockey.
Might be.
Especially if you're established and you have a GM working under you. And I think being a GM would be close.
You want the best job in
hockey? I would love to be a general manager.
You know what the best job in hockey is?
What's that?
Having an unbelievable, successful fucking podcast.
Playing career?
No.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, a podcast. That's the best job in hockey.
It's the best job in hockey is to have play hockey, work with hockey like you do, mm-hmm. and have a podcast that nobody fucking owns that we get the big boys on and we do whatever the fuck we want for the rest of our life. That's the best job in hockey. And I'm your boss and you're my boss. And that's it. That's the best job in hockey. Write it fucking down.
Okay. There you go.
There you go.
Well, I'm glad we got Jim Rutherford on, man. And we wish him all the best.
He's going to be good, man. Yeah. He's good. He sounds cool. Dude, he didn't have to do that. So mm-hmm. he's feeling pretty damn good.
What does that tell you when a guy like Malkin opens up to him and emotionally pens a letter?
It just means that they like him. Like, I would do, God, I cry, you know, like, I'd do anything
for him. I love how he talked about the emotional attachment you have to your players that you won a championship
exactly, with. Man.
I got to ask Doug Armstrong about that.
Yeah, it's different.
Like, do you look at your players, do you feel more connected to your players?
Well,
that you won with.
No, he feels connected with Backus and shit like that. Don't get me wrong. Like certain guys mm-hmm. for sure. But your certain normal guys that won you a cup are in a different pedestal than the normal guys that just busted their ass for you that you didn't win.
Does that come into play when you're negotiating with Jordan Binnington and stuff like that? 1,000%.
Of course it does.
It's my guy, absolutely. Man.
Kyle Clifford, 2 Stanley Cups. He got a million piece. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even got a job if he didn't win Stanley Cup. Like, seriously.
Yeah, you really don't think so. That's interesting.
No, I don't know.
No, when you bring that label as a winner.
You're a winner.
As a character guy you can bring into a locker room.
We'll take this. Even after sports, mm-hmm. if you win a cup or you win a championship anywhere, like, you're automatically in a different pedestal. Even if you're a fourth line fucking dick, you won a cup, mm-hmm. you're there.
No, you're labeled.
You're labeled, dude. Mm-hmm. You did it. So it's just different, man.
Like these coaches, Steve Sullivan, all these guys, man. They're always going to have that.
What are you going to say to them?
Stanley Cup winner attached to their name.
Steve Sullivan, what are you going to do for me? I'm going to win you a cup. Well, mm-hmm. how? I just did twice. You fuck. Like, what are you going to say? Like, you know, like you have it.
Yeah, I know.
So anyway, that's it, baby.
All right.
That's it, baby.
We liked having Jim Rutherford on with us.
We fucking get
episode number 119 here on the Cameron Strick Podcast. Don't forget to go to that CamAndStrick.com website. Check out the hats.
Check it all out, dudes. Shit, we love you all, man.
We'll ship those off to you.
Yeah.
Have some other cool stuff coming up.
If there was a cool thing I could fucking... If Andy and I could put on a goddamn golf, I'd have all you fuckers come down, too.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. If we made a ton of money, I'd fly all you fuckers in and party.
Maybe we might have the...
You kidding?
We're going to have a golf tournament. It's probably going to be a Belle Reve.
Get the fuck out of here. Don't even talk. We're going at my course, dude. Okay.
Well, that is my course. I already actually have a... I got a membership there before you, which is so fun.
I hope people know when you're lying, Andy.
No, it's so true.
I just hope they know when you're lying.
Dude, they asked me to be a member at the course before they asked you.
I want to make enough money to take all these fans that support us so much and entertain the fuck out of them.
Well, you know what they can do?
What?
They can go sign up for CarShield today.
Oh, my word.
CarShield.com. 800-857-2481. That's the phone number. Again, get that protection. Take your car where you want it to have service. Pick your mechanic. It's that simple. 800-857-2481. Mention the promo code CAM. You're going to save 10%.
And probably get laid, but whatever.
KeepItHandsome.com. Get the new hats from Keep It Handsome. And a portion of the proceeds go back to the Montreal Resource Center, which fights bullying. Yes. It says fight ugly on the hat. How sick is that?
Fucking bad. Everywhere I go, I'm like, fucking shit. I know,
because you wear that hoodie every day, right?
Yes. Basically, I need another one. I need a white one.
We're going to get... don't have the white ones. Merkel, we need white ones, too.
I ain't playing them.
I know. We need white ones also.
Yeah.
So get that hat. Also get the shampoos, the conditioner, the head balm, the beard moisturizer. You can do it while you're driving. That's what I'll do it in the car.
Well, we don't have a fucking beard like you.
I'll do it in the car. I'll do it when I'm on horseback. I'll do it on the weekends when I'm riding a horse. If I'm driving, if I'm riding a bike or a
Andy does
Polaris.
Nothing cool besides like interview people, just so you know. Okay. Everything he does is cool is with me. Just remember that.
So anyway, get that hat from keepithandsome.com and do it today. Please. We'd love for you to support our people.
Yeah, and anti-bullying, dude.
And Bellman.
And Bellman, Jesus Christ.
Dan Bellman. I had their sushi last night.
He's a statue.
Salmon and avocado, tuna and avocado.
It's like, what? Name me one car dealership in the Midwest that's not creepy. Oh, fucking Dan Bellman.
Yeah.
Well, give him a goddamn statue.
That's the only one.
Give him a fucking statue.
It's kind of a trick question what you just asked.
Isn't that funny, though? I'm in the Midwest. I'm a woman, and I want to go fucking buy a car.
Name me one dealership that'll give you sushi and flavored water.
Well, or like, how about just... Enough with the sushi, because It's like going to gas station sushi.
No, it's not.
Doesn't matter. Fresh. Here's the point.
Fresh.
When your wife walks in there, she's not creeped out, dude. And that, to me, goes so fucking far.
Says a lot.
Swinging dick motherfuckers. He needs a goddamn statue, Dan Bellman does. And he supports youth
Where
hockey.
Would you put it?
Fucking downtown. Brett Hallway.
Wait, no, change the name of the street. Dan Bellman Dan Way.
Dan Bellman Way. Dan and Brett Hallway.
We're changing the name of the street Jesus to Dan Christ. Bellman Way.
No, he needs a fucking...
Get your car, Cadillac Buick GMC. Yeah. I'm looking at that Escalade, Dano. You know that. On the other side, you got the Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Cam's looking at the pink Jeep.
I don't give a fuck.
So, and you're also looking at the Enclave. I know that the pearl white Enclave.
The Buick.
Yeah, the Buick. So
Tiger Woods, kind of.
The old Tiger Woods. I wish he was in a Buick. He may not have, you never know.
He might not even have a broken leg.
Probably.
The stupid Hyundai he had.
Yeah, he was in a Hyundai. They put my boy Tiger in a Hyundai. Hyundai?
Get that Hyundai. Oh, yeah, Hyundai. Those are fucking awesome.
You're
going
to do that to my boy. And I know it's the luxury brand. It's the luxury line is the Genesis, but you're going to do that to my boy?
It's like you're a fucking badass. Like, put his ass in a Hyundai? I'm going to put you in a fucking Hyundai.
Is it Hyundai or Hyundai? How do you say it? I know, how do you say it? Hyundai?
Han shit. The fuck I say. Go get that Buick. Fucking badass.
Okay. Yeah. I actually agree with you.
You write that down?
That one. Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Need to write down a lot of things, man. Okay. I teach people shit.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. When I drive black tie.
Mm-hmm.
And I get what I want. I get when I want it. And this is really just amazing stuff when you think about it. You know, maybe the future of car ownership, really, when you really truly look at it. Cam, there's so many different cars to choose from. You like the economy line, which I can really respect that about you. So they have lots of cars for you to choose from.
Is that why?
They have the gold, the silver, the package, or the gold, silver, bronze, and then platinum.
And where's my character?
So I'm a platinum member, you're an economy member, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. But I like the exotic cars. You can have luxury cars. You can have economy cars.
You do whatever you want.
You just download the app. Listen, it's that simple. So do it today. Get that app, and let's sign up. Let's get everybody signed up.
Easy peasy. And if the weather's getting nice, sometimes it's shitty. So like, I'm going to get that fucking SUV. And they're like, no, I'm horny today. I'm taking my wife out. Mm. I'm getting a fucking Corvette. I'm kind of like riled up today. I got a thing going on.
So you'd want a Corvette?
I'm
going to
get a Corvette.
Situation.
I'm going to drive. I'm going to go to dinner, and then we're going to come home in a beautiful Corvette. Mm-hmm. And then my wife's going to make sweet love to me because we're in a fucking badass car.
Well, you better have some beer moisturizer.
That fucking Hyundai.
You better have some beer moisturizer. Okay.
For my beard? Why?
If you want her to love you. Okay.
Dude, she doesn't care.
It's going to take more than just a
Corvette. She wants me to like do a workout before we make love. Mm.
So anyway, check that out and get your hats today from Keep It Handsome. You can go to camastrick.com as well and hook up some hats. All right, this has been episode number 119, the Cam and Strick podcast.
119, damn, baby.
With the long, long time GM, Jim Rutherford, man. We appreciate him for coming on with us.
Love you, buddy.